high atop the skyline of downtown Chicago to 38 states and Canada. Your host for this evening, Justin Kaufman.
Tonight, the stock market tumbles due to fears of the coronavirus. More people infected, more cases right here in the United States. Are you thinking about purchasing a mask? I'm thinking about it. Former National Security Advisor John Bolton has supposedly written a book that includes information that may undercut the president's defense at the Senate impeachment trial. Will this force Republicans to call witnesses, or will we be forced to shell out $29.95 to see what happens? And today is Holocaust Remembrance Day, a day set aside to remember and honor those who died and the survivors of Adolf Hitler's genocide. Also, it's National Chocolate Cake Day. What? What a terrible double booking. This is proof that there's probably no need for a chocolate cake day. Shame on you, everybody. I get why it's Holocaust Remembrance Day. Today's the 75th anniversary of the liberation of Auschwitz. But for cake, was cake invented on this day? Or did they just buy it? Yeah. Those stories tonight and more. But first, Justin Kaufman with you, 312-981-7200, with you till 11 o'clock tonight. Happy to be here. Happy on this Monday. The big story tonight, for two nights in a row, it's been the untimely death of Kobe Bryant and his 13-year-old daughter, along with seven others who were aboard a helicopter that crashed Sunday morning. Tonight, as we speak, the Bulls are honoring Kobe with a video tribute and 24 seconds of silence before the game. There are many ways to talk about this story. Much of the media seems to be taking the hero route. But I think there are other things to talk about. Maybe more about how we're acting around his death. There's a story, of course, of whether or not Kobe was, quote-unquote, a hero. Five-time champion, was adored on the court for his Mamba mentality. An American story, if there ever was one. A wonder kid who came out of high school to be the youngest player to ever step foot on the NBA hardwood. Had to have his parents co-sign his contract because he wasn't even 18. He went on to play 20 years in the NBA and not only win championships, but become one of the sport's ambassadors and leaders. But he had his share of run-ins off the court, including a rape accusation in Colorado, which was settled out of court, and a gay slur he once threw at a referee, in which he apologized for. And again, in a very American way, he found himself on a path of redemption, in which many forgot about the before-mentioned transgressions. So you could do a whole show on this very American story. Or you could talk about the helicopter itself, the crash. Why was it in the air when other aircraft around were grounded? The flight plan, the local connection, how the chopper was once owned by the state of Illinois. It's actually sold off at auction by then Governor Bruce Rauner. Remember when we needed to cut costs? That's how we cut costs. Or we could talk about the media and the rush to get the story out to the masses. Several tweets going ahead with the story as fast as they could to beat the competition. Be damned, his family. Most of them wrong. It's just awful to be wrong. But I like Rick Morrissey's column today in the Sun-Times. He wrote about loving and mourning a person you've never met. Why do we get so emotional about celebrities that we have no intimate connection with, that we've never met just from watching them on television or in a stadium? 312-981-7200. When's the last time you cried because a celebrity passed away? Did you cry because of Kobe? I think I got more emotional because of his daughter, a 13-year-old daughter, and the other kids that were on that flight and that helicopter. That's sad. But whether it's a celebrity who was getting up there in age, died of old age or maybe disease, or someone who lost their life way too early, like thinking of Kennedy, right? On the old plane off of Cape Cod. Or Walter Payton. I remember Walter Payton. I think Walter Payton's probably the only sports star celebrity that I ever cried. I actually shed tears about. I've seen so many people today and last night talk about how they were emotional, that they actually cried. I saw so many people crying on TV today. Did you? 312-981-7200. I don't think I would. I don't have a connection to celebrities that I feel that the actual emotion will come out of me. Was I sad? Yes. Was I stunned? Yes. Did I cry? No. But again, this story is more than just whether or not you liked or loved a celebrity. Of course, there were other people that were on that helicopter, including his 13-year-old daughter, which tugs at the heartstring for anyone who, I mean, anyone. It doesn't even matter if you're a parent or not. That's just not how life is supposed to be. And you've seen so many great tributes today from great writers just about the idea of how love and life, it's all fleeting and it's fast, and you have to take what you have right now and make sure that you love it as hard as you can. 312-981-7200. That's going to be our topic to start the program tonight. We've got others. We'll talk a little bit about corrupt politicians a little bit later in the program. Also, Steve Dolinsky will be here. Talk about how Yelp is going to put health code violations of local Chicago restaurants on their site. Maybe we don't need the health department. Maybe the Trump administration is right. Maybe we need to cut the red tape because places like Yelp will pick up slack. Restaurants, they're crying foul. Steve Dolinsky will be here to talk about that, talk about Restaurant Week, and also get us up to speed on some of the more notable restaurants that are opening up in 2020. And then the 9 o'clock hour, let's talk about whether or not Chicago is the Midwest. There are a couple big stories out, and we'll get to it, about whether or not Chicago is part of the Midwest that is spoken about in Washington, D.C., or is part of the sentiments or the sensibilities. Is Midwest a regional situation, or is it more political or social? Can there be more than one Midwest? We'll talk about being a Midwesterner and whether or not Chicagoans fit the bill. But our first conversation is around Kobe Bryant. When's the last time that you cried, or ever you cried, about a celebrity's passing? I think of my parents and I think of John Lennon. Of course, probably going to come up in a lot of people's thoughts today as someone who died way too soon, and many tears were shed at that untimely death. And others, you could text in 312-981-7200, or you can go to the phones, same number, and we'll get to it. Justin Kaufman with you here on 720 WGN. Let's go to our first call. No, wait. Well, why don't we do this? We'll take a break, and then we'll come back. We'll get the text, because the calls are jumping in, because I think this is going to be a hot topic tonight. Kathy's getting on the line, some others on the line. We got some texts coming in as well. Justin Kaufman with you till 11 o'clock tonight. We'll take our first break, so stay with us. Let's go to Paul. Paul, is there a moment in which you cried when a celebrity passed away?
Hey, Justin. I'm glad you're talking about this tonight. I wept over James Gandolfini, and then shortly after, Robin Williams.
I thought about Robin Williams today. That was one that I feel I could have. I don't remember particularly, but I feel like I would have. That seems to
be and that's,
the shared.
Well, I mean, because he did it all, right? He was he made you laugh. He made you cry. I think of Patch Adams. The guy was just had it going on for him. And then I met Gandolfini when he was filming Surviving Christmas in Saugerties years and years ago. And just a sweetheart of a guy. And I've never done that before. And now with Kobe passing on, just a devastating thing. I think it's because he went out on top, you know?
Yeah.
He made it. So. Yeah.
Thanks, Paul. Thanks for those thoughts. I appreciate it.
Yep.
Thanks for calling in. 312-981-7200. Kathy's on the line. Kathy, what do you think? Have you cried when a celebrity passes on?
Well, if you haven't cried already, if you watch his Dear Basketball animated short that he won the Academy Award for,
that's
this
so
is a
emotional
poem he wrote, and then he had this brilliant illustrator whose name I forget right now, who worked for Disney, sketch it, and then John Williams did the the music to it. So it just, if you could just, you know, go on, Lion, look up Dear Basketball.
Yeah, you know, Kathy, it's interesting. I heard someone today, or I saw someone, I didn't click through because it was just saying exactly what you're saying, but they're saying that it takes on a different light now that this tragedy has happened. If you watch it with the tragedy, it is even more profound than when it won the Academy Award.
Yes, and it's almost like he wrote his own, you know, obituary. So, but I would suggest it won an Academy Award.
Yeah,
I mean, it's stellar. So everybody check that out.
All right.
You certainly will have a tear in your eyes at that point.
Yeah, thanks, Kathy. Thanks for that. All right. A lot of texts coming in on this. Wept over the passing of Johnny Carson, 832 says. Yeah. Johnny Carson definitely being someone who is definitely part of people's history. I mean, especially, you know, celebrities who enter people's lives and have a responsibility every single night to entertain, like a person like Johnny Carson, you can understand how you would weep when losing someone like that. I would think late night talk shows would people, because that there's almost an intimate connection there. So I would think more than anything, like the idea that you definitely are watching, maybe you're watching before you go to bed or you're watching in bed. There's an intimate connection that you feel really connected to those, especially when before the proliferation of talk shows and content, when it was just three people you could watch every night. 630 says the whole Kobe thing is tragic, but no tears. A little choked up thinking about the kids, but that's because I have some of my own. Yeah, you're absolutely right. That's 630 and I are on the same page. I feel the same way. No tears, but I did find myself twice kind of being choked up just thinking about not only the child who died and the children that were on that flight, but the children and the siblings and the families that are left behind. Mm. 630 says the last celebrity I cried for was Bob Collins when his plane crashed. Yeah, no, I get that. That's another one. I think that falls in the same category. I think some of the great radio hosts, especially in drive times, again, you get that same kind of feeling like Johnny Carson, that you are connected to them because you listen to them every single day. Hmm. 630 said Farley, Chris Farley. Yeah, Chris Farley. That's a difficult one. And different circumstances, too. You know, I wonder if the circumstances play, but, you know, you've seen the Adam Sandler tribute he does for Chris Farley in his Netflix special, and he did it on Saturday Night Live, too, and it's really hard to not get choked up just watching that years later. We're not even talking about today. 312 says Lady Diana and Kennedy Jr., of course. Yeah. That was a time right there where, you know, when you had two of them in a row there that were tragic like that. Hmm. I cried when Walter Payton died too, says 815. Yep, just like me.
Oh, that's a good one. Yeah, what's your name?
I agree. That's probably the only time that's ever happened to me. Is that I feel like I cried when a celebrity died and it was Walter Payton. I think a lot of Chicagoans had that feeling, right? Absolutely. Princess Diana 708, I fall apart every time the award show do the in memoriam segment. 847 says that's true. That's true. That's all of us, right? That's why they do it. It's good reminders. Let's go to Brad. Brad's on the line. Brad, who'd you cry over when they passed on?
Ron Santel.
Yeah.
You know, I watched him as a kid, listened to him on the radio every day all summer long, and it was a tough one. You know, that guy went through a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
A lot of stuff.
Yeah, that's a great one. That's one that's still, to a lot of people, a lot of Chicagoans, get choked up thinking of Ronnie.
You know, and the sad thing, you know, he never got to see the World Series either, you know?
Yeah. Well, we all know.
You guys have a good night.
Yeah, thanks, Brad. He did. He was around enough to see the Cubs win the World Series. So I always think that he's looking down. 708 said, I had friends years ago who were inconsolable about the death of Elvis Presley. Cried for days, and every time they talked about him, cried again. Wow, that's an impact. Yeah, Payne Stewart. Another one, Amy Winehouse. That's an interesting one. 847 says, I just feel so sad about what she went through. Yeah. It's great to see. The interview with the Clippers coach, Doc Rivers, after the game got me choked up. But one of those people, I'm one of those people who start to cry when other people cry. It's Holly. Tom Petty says 847. There are some people, you know, it's interesting because there are a lot of people who are texting in tonight or calling in tonight that want to get into other conversations and or want to talk about the other topics I kind of brought up. You know, this concept of what's a hero, you know, or what's the story, what's the legacy when Kobe Bryant had a tremendously sordid past. And it's still kind of unresolved. You saw the story in the Washington Post reporter had tweeted out an old Daily Beast story about the rape allegation and the settlement. And she ended up getting suspended, fired? I'm not sure what it was, but the Washington Post kind of made a quick judgment to punish her for that tweet. And they even wrote an opinion piece, which is so weird. The Washington Post is so weird sometimes. So they wrote an opinion piece that essentially the Washington Post was wrong for doing so. And it is this question about mob mentality. And, you know, I think in this case, everybody wants to have a moment because it was such a tragedy. And automatically we want to go right from being sad to right into talking about his legacy. And I understand that. That's what we're doing tonight. But this concept, you have to think about it too, that it's okay and you have every right to be sad. What you don't is moving on to have that legacy conversation to sort of whitewash what wasn't great about the person's life. And I think you're seeing that a little bit in the media, especially in sports media. It rarely gets referenced about the rape accusation, rarely gets referenced about the very public gay slur against the referee that he ended up. And I give him a lot of credit for that because he ended up after that experience joining up with GLAAD and being very public about his apology and very public about what he said was wrong. Doesn't mean that he didn't say it on national TV to a referee as a slur. You know, those kind of things, obviously, you got to take into account. Lots of texts coming in here. 312 said Michael Jackson. Michael Jackson's interesting one. Obviously, again, Michael Jackson might be a great comparison, although I would believe much more sorted than Kobe Bryant, but that's not for me to say. But the day that Michael Jackson died was similar to yesterday if you looked at how social media at the time is primarily Facebook when Michael Jackson died, and everybody on Facebook, every post that you saw was about Michael Jackson. It was kind of what that site was actually built for, this idea of community and everybody coming together to share their thoughts at one time. And it was like that yesterday for me. I thought Instagram, every post that was up was a some sort of photo put up or memory of Kobe Bryant. And the only problem I have with that, both Facebook and Instagram use algorithms. It's not real time. So today at 5 o'clock, I'm looking at my Instagram and it's like, oh, I just found out about Kobe Bryant. That's what you're getting because it's from 2 days ago. That's what's the downside to the algorithms of social media is when you have breaking news and you have to hear one of your friends' reaction from 26 hours ago. Not their fault. It's Instagram's fault or Facebook's fault. Jerry Garcia, 219, says Jerry Garcia. Chris Cornell. Oh, that is sad, yeah. John Denver, 815, yeah. John Lennon and Don Knotts. An odd combination. But Ron Santo, Brian Piccolo. People obviously are responding to this. I wasn't even a big fan, but I was really surprised that I cried when Michael Jackson died. 708 says that. Yeah. Yeah, great stuff. I mean, it's an amazing amount of people that are texting in right now, and I thank you for doing so. It's a very interesting topic to think about. Who you tear up over? I don't know. I find myself to be a guy who tears up a lot more than I thought I would as an adult. And I don't know if I feel like at a certain point that, you know, you hope that you're the stoic man, but then I'm watching like a rerun of Family Ties. I'm like, but I can't think of celebrities that really grab my attention. I've had a lot of unfortunate friends passing away in the last 6 months, which is just a bummer. And that has been a test of your emotional state more than celebrities passing away, of course. 630 says George Harrison, Prince, Anthony Bourdain, especially Bourdain. Yeah. 217 says President Kennedy. Yep. James Gandolfini. Kirby Puckett. Maybe a Twins fan. John Ritter, says 847. The lack of mourning for Farrah Fawcett in the shadow of Michael Jackson's death, says 815. Gosh, lots of great stuff. 773 takes the umbrage with what I'm saying, says, what makes his death sad, Kobe Bryant, is that he seemed to have turned it around and become a good person with so much to give. I can see that. I'm fine with that. But I also think that there are other situations where people are doing that in our society, and mob mentality kind of comes in and says, no, you're not allowed to do that. But Kobe Bryant was allowed to do that, and, you know, we forgive him for his past sins, but I'm not sure that that's ours to forgive. There are a lot of people involved in those transgressions that I don't speak for. And I just think that at the end of the day, it's okay to have that be part of his legacy. That's what was part, that is part of his legacy. If he, as I said at the beginning of the segment, he's on a road to redemption. I understand that. But that doesn't mean that we whitewash or erase everything that happened in the past. Especially when we're talking legacy, not just talking about the raw emotion of losing someone who entertained us for years and, of course, is a celebrity. Lots of great stuff. I'll keep reading. We'll take a break here, our bottom of the hour break, and then I'll come back and we can read some more and get into some corrupt politicians as well. It's Justin Kaufman, 312-981-7200. Stay with us. All right, 312-981-7200. Justin Kaufman with you till 11 o'clock tonight. Got a lot of texts about what celebrity, when celebrities pass. We're talking about Kobe Bryant and the just horrific story yesterday about him, his daughter, and the seven other passengers on that helicopter flight that crashed in Los Angeles. Just talking about our relationship and our intimacy with celebrities. And Rick Morrissey had a great column today in the Chicago Sun-Times about why we mourn over people that we've never met and why we grieve and why we're emotional. And obviously, Kobe Bryant fits that category. He'll be thought of and remembered for his achievements both on and off the court for years. And we're having a side conversation just about it's not wrong for us to bring up, as many of the texters have, the off the court stuff that has also tarnished a little bit of that legacy, and we talk about rape accusation in Colorado and the gay slurs on the court, and a referee the one time, and again settled out of court. I'm not getting into whether or not he did it or didn't do it, and I'm also not at all talking about his behavior, his actions in any form, what's good or bad. I just think that they should be part of the conversation. You've heard a lot of this on Twitter today and social media and others just talking about whether or not it's appropriate to bring these things up, especially as one of our texters pointed out that he had, I don't know if he ever paid his price, but he had moved on from those acts, so, and turned his life around and was having a second chapter in his life. So, but we're talking about whether or not you cry when celebrities pass. 815 says, I tend to shed a tear for the living, like Kobe's wife and daughters. That's so true. Yeah. And I remember getting choked up listening to you when you returned from your grandmother's funeral. Yes, that was a couple years ago, 2 years or so. That was tough to get through to talk about. Yeah. But that's, again, that's emotion because that's someone I lived with and I grew up with. You know, it's different than someone I watched play basketball in the Heights. And you're absolutely right. I mean, that shedding a tear for the living, I think that that's where a lot of our emotion comes from, is just, you know, knowing how just difficult that must be for everybody involved. Not just the Bryants, but the other families that were in that, or had loved ones lost in that crash. John Lennon, end of discussion, 630. That's one that I cannot escape the imagery. I was alive at the time, I was 5 or 6 years old when that happened, but that imagery of showing the footage of people doing the candlelight vigil on Strawberry Fields, that might have even been after the fact, but the Central Park around the Dakota, the fact that every year people come out, and on the day that he was shot, they still do candlelight vigils. There's something to be said about that imagery and why people do that for that celebrity who touched them in such ways that they are emotional. They cry. I know my parents did. I mean, that's probably the most shocking, for a certain generation, probably the most shocking celebrity death of all time. Elvis Presley was, as much as people love Elvis Presley, and there's a couple on here that talk nothing about, everything about Elvis, he was on his way out. I don't mean, you know, I don't mean speak ill of the dead, but, you know, he, if you watch the Elvis Presley documentaries and everything about that, you recognize that the end of his life was tortured, and he had a lot of drug addictions and ended up dying on the toilet, right? John Lennon was assassinated, walking into his house, which is, I mean, that's just an unbelievable way for one crazed individual who felt he had an only relationship with this guy, took away everybody's relationship with the guy. Yeah, that's a tough one. 847 says, I know this is completely lame, but spoiler alert, the Avengers Tony Stark. That's good. There was a spoiler. I give you a spoiler alert, but yeah. Yeah, but that's, you know, but movies are different. Movies are designed. That prolonged, sustained, on-screen death was designed to get us to cry, right? The whole thing. That's the 6 minutes of monologue while he's laying in the arms of somebody is designed to make us cry. That might be a little bit different. Yeah, a lot of people texting in for Princess Diana, and this person says, I cried when Princess Diana's funeral was on, and I felt stupid about it because I didn't know her. I don't think you have to feel... I would sell you right now, 847. You're not the only one on the text line, which is probably 100 deep at this point, that has mentioned Princess Diana in that funeral. So you know, you don't feel stupid about it at all. A lot of Payne Stewart's as well, which is interesting. Dale Earnhardt, and most recently Neil Peart. So John says Neil Peart, who the drummer from Rush, who just died... we were on the air when that happened, or on the air that day that it happened. Yeah, I mean, to think about how important Neil Peart was to many. Yeah. Yeah, to find out that Robin Williams was in such pain made me cry. Gene Roddenberry, Carol Shelby. Yep, Joan Rivers is a great one. Yeah, so many good stuff here. Oh, my gosh. Yeah. So we can have this conversation throughout the night. If you know, for all those that are texting in, thank you for texting in to give us a moment of your intimacy and who you cried about when they passed on. Kobe Bryant, of course, what we're talking about today. There's other stuff to talk about, and we might as well make the transition into it. 312-981-7200. Like I said, coming up at 8 o'clock, Steve Dolinsky is going to join us to talk a little bit about the story that broke at the end of last week that said that Yelp is going to start putting health code violations, health code records of Chicago restaurants online. So when you go to Yelp to see which restaurant you want to go to in what particular neighborhood, it's going to not only tell you what users have said about it, it's not only going to tell you, show you a couple pictures and things like that, but it's also going to have a record of the health code violations. Now, is that a good thing? I don't know. Restaurants say no. And again, there's some questions about whether or not that's a good thing, because the common diner may not understand what, you know, how many health code violations are given to restaurants on any given day. I don't know. Or maybe they just don't want you to see their dirty laundry. No pun intended. I've seen enough Gordon Ramsay to know that almost every restaurant that he touches has got some moldy shrimp in the back. Maybe I should recognize the format of that show, but it seems like kids, oh, no, well, your chicken's in the wrong spot. Oh, you can't have this outside. No. So we'll talk to Steve Dolinsky about whether or not that's happening. There's moldy shrimp in all the restaurants in Chicago. John Bolton, the former national security advisor. This is my segment about corrupt politicians, both national and local. So John Bolton, the former national security advisor, had written a book about his time in the White House, and in it, he has some dirt that is relevant to the impeachment proceedings that are happening right now in the Senate. This guy, John Bolton. Does anybody like this guy? Dems dislike him because he's considered to be the architect of the Iraq War. He's kind of a hawk at heart, total conservative Republican. And now Republicans hate him because he's spilling the beans on this administration. I don't know. What's the like? You're telling me that this guy has evidence that he could show the American people that the president did or did not commit an impeachable offense, and he refuses to give it to Congress, but he'll give it to you for $29.95? Is there anything more douchey than putting evidence behind a paywall? He's essentially a walking click here. That's totally ridiculous. I don't understand this guy. I don't care about your political affiliations. This is not a political conversation. But if a guy has pertinent info on what might be transpiring when it comes to the impeachment of the president, and he's like, you know what, this is better, I'm going to hold this out, I'd rather have this in airport kiosks at the Hudson News than in the Senate chamber. That's ridiculous. Lost a lot of respect for this guy already. Not to say I had a ton to begin with. He's got to do something about that mustache, too. It's a goofy-looking mustache. See, if I were him, I would. If they end up trying to call him to the Senate, I would do it, and I'd show up with a new look. All right, walk in there, maybe dye the hair, lose the mustache. Walk in looking all John Hamm. Get up there, pull a Succession Season 2 finale. Drop the mic and get out. That's what I would do. But no, he's going to save it for his book. Everybody's got to write a book. Absolutely stunning. The guy's got this info and he's not going to tell anyone unless you pay. But then again, that's politics in 2020. And on the local front, this one gets me too. State Senator Martin Sandoval, charged today with bribery and tax evasion. He's most likely to plead guilty. Well, you know what that means? It means anyone who's ever leaned into the senator and said, you know what? Don't tell anyone I've told you this, but this is the thing. Is on tape. Anyone who's sitting around his desk in the Springfield chamber. Hey, Martin, you got a sec? Oh, totally off the record. You didn't hear this from me. Yeah, he heard it, and so did the feds. This is all about the red light camera industry, so expect more from this. This is actually the first charges in the recent raids over red light cameras that have been going on. None of this is a great look, since Sandoval was a big part. I think he headed up the Transportation Committee in the Senate. So should the state of Illinois outlaw red light cameras now? I'm tending towards yes. The city of Chicago said we're not getting rid of them. They're making the streets safer, and we're not going to change anything. Nothing's corrupt. There's nothing to see here. But it's obvious that there's corruption involved. They just dropped bribery and tax evasion charges on a guy who took bribes to get red light cameras in certain districts. How do we not know that the whole thing is rigged? What's to say put an extra 500 to make that yellow light go 1 second? Hey, I'll give you an extra 1,000 if you just make that yellow blink. Get to that red. Make that box a little bit bigger. I want all right turns on red. Here's a check for 2,500. Give me all right turns on red. Have you been busted by a red light camera? Tell me. I want to know. I've been. I feel like I've ponied up a couple hundred now. 312-981-7200. Should we get rid of them? Should we keep them? Is it possible for this dude to be corrupt and that the red light cameras still work? That we should still have them? Because like the city of Chicago transportation head says, no, they're good. They keep people safe. I have to say, as a driver, I'm very aware of going through a red light or going through a long yellow because of those cameras. So I'm slowing down and I'm stopping. So maybe it is working. But at the same time, how can we have any respect or integrity for this thing? I don't think we can. All right, 312-981-7200. Should we get rid of these cameras or not? We'll take a break, quick, come back, get to your calls. Stay with us. 312-981-7200, the phone number. Justin Kaufman with you till 11 o'clock. Coming up at 8 o'clock, Steve Dolinsky is going to join us, talk about Yelp reviews, restaurant week, new restaurants, lots to talk about. Always great when Steve Dolinsky comes in and takes some calls, too, if you please. We're talking about whether or not we should get rid of these red light cameras. And I am on the fence. 630 says, what happened to passing the point of no return? Red light cameras, no good. Used a different word. No good. 773 says, I don't pay him. Force me. Force me to pay it. Yeah, I know. I get that. But are you doing that because you feel like it's corrupt, or you feel like it's just a money grab and you have the right to run through red lights? Because I would make the argument, and I'm trying to kind of play devil's advocate here, that if the city's commissioner is saying, no, we're keeping them, don't care about the corruption, they're great for safety, they have data to back that up. I know that there was a time in our lives, and it spanned over decades and decades and decades, that we could run a red light and take a chance. That we would try our best to not get caught, you know, taking the corner or doing that no red light, no turn on red, 7-7. But those days, like the days of many, are behind us. But I argue that I wonder if we can get rid of this whole rig on a technicality. The fact that this dude, the senator, the state senator, has proven that the whole thing got set up just to fleece his pocket, not fleece, to pad his pockets. Let's go to Ed. Ed, you got what's your story, Ed?
Hey, Saturday night I was coming home. I was tired. I don't drink. I don't do drugs. And I wasn't paying attention, and I came up to a red light, and it was icy and snowy, and I wasn't paying attention. I didn't slow down fast enough, and I just ended up going sliding right through the red light.
Mm-hmm.
And there happened to be a sheriff right next to me.
Mm.
And I got pulled over immediately. And they go, do you know why you're pulled over? I said, yeah. I tried braking. I said it was better for me to just go right through the intersection. You know, and she goes, is there any reason why you did that? I said, if I hit my brakes real hard, I would have slid through it anyways.
Right.
And she was like, all right, well, yeah. You haven't been doing anything. I said, no. And she just took my license plate, my insurance, my registration. She came back and she goes, I'm just going to give you a warning.
Yeah, see?
Now, if I had gone through that red light, you know, with the right. cameras, I would have just gotten a $200 fine or whatever.
Yeah, you're absolutely
but
right. No camera's going to do that, right.
But she knew I didn't do, you know, it was just an honest mistake.
Yeah. Well, that's
and
good. That's
right
how it's supposed to work.
She saw
right?
me hit the brakes.
Yeah. Good job.
You know, that's what I hate about those red light cameras.
Yeah. Thanks, Ed. Thanks for the call. He's not wrong. He's right. I just don't know if there's enough sheriff's deputies around the state to do that for every red light. That's the problem. But very interesting. That's right. That's where humans can assess humans doing things that they need to do to protect themselves, like sliding through the ice. Brendan, you're on the
yes.
line. How are you, bud?
Yes, I'm good. How are you, Justin?
I'm good, man. What's your story?
Well, something that I was thinking about this today. Something I miss from the days before red light cameras was you see a yellow light and you speed up and you think you're going to bite the yellow and it turns red and you're like, oh my God, I clearly blew a red light. I could have killed somebody. And then you look in the rear of your mirror and the guy behind you went to.
Yeah, right.
it just doesn't happen anymore. I want those days back.
Yeah,
so.
You want them back. That's great.
Just for the shock of looking at the guy behind you like, I was bad, but you're a criminal. Like, that was horrible.
Thanks, Brendan. That's good. That's funny. Yeah, but that's, I think at the core of this, you know, as Brendan jokes around about it, you know, we do hearken back. We want the old, right? We want to keep it like it was. So keep it like it was. But I don't know. There's something to be said that what Brendan's talking about. I mean, he's kind of making a joke of it, but it's true that there was a lot of egregious driving that could cause a lot of accidents and probably did cause a lot of accidents that now, because of the red light camera, you're like, I'm not giving a chance it. I can't tell you. When I see one of those lights go off, because in the city they'll have the cameras that kind of like go off and the whole intersection gets a poof, like a, you know, like an old 19th century like when photographs were just invented. Poof, the bulb's all hot. But you see that flash, automatically, I'm like, I'm the best driver ever. Going 20 miles per hour. Not going to catch me. John from 773 says, the argument that the cameras are for safety is a joke. Make speed cameras visible, a mile-per-hour alert, just like many school zones do. I've been rear-ended at a red light camera. Safety, yeah. Yeah. 773 says, officers on foot that write a ticket with the adhesive they slap on the windshield, take a photo of the driver and plates. There's no interaction. That happens now in Chicago. Yeah. You know what's next? I'll tell you what's next. 312 is mad about the on-duty marked police cars that run the red lights with the lights on all the time. Yeah, I know. You can get mad about that. Everyone has been out of shape about that, but that used to be the one thing that we would let police officers do because they were police officers. I think that's okay. I don't have a problem with that. I never had a problem with that. 224 says, could they make the notification signs any smaller? Out here in the burbs, they have them on roads with 45-plus speed limits and shirt yellows. How does that work? I don't know how that works. We'll find out. My guess is, and I know what you're getting at, 224, is that they don't want you to know the camera's there. They don't want you to know the speed cameras. They don't want you to know the red light cameras. They want to catch you. So therefore, you have to spend $100 that goes into their municipal budget. It's a pretty simple process. And I think that was with John's point a little bit earlier, just the idea that safety, you continue to say safety. If you wanted to do safety, there's better ways to do so. Signage, speed signs to tell you how fast you're going. You see those by the parks all the time. This is to deter and to revenize. That's my word I just came up with. Revenize. My problem is I don't know that the safety argument works when the guy who allowed all the red light cameras to be put up in the first place was on the take. That's the problem. You run the risk now, and you've muddied the water. You poisoned the water. I have the argument, and everyone will listen to me to say, listen, I don't know if that yellow is, because there was an article, I remember an article just a couple months ago saying, oh, that's weird. The yellows on record in some areas are a lot faster than others. They're not the standard. Well, did somebody pay Senator Sandoval to look the other way? That's my problem. At the end of the day, that's what public corruption is. That's why our government officials can't be taking bribes, because it ruins the whole thing. Now, what probably could be a great piece of revenue for state, municipality, for the city, whatever it might be, is going to be taken away because this dude took a couple $1,000s to make sure they set him up in wherever. This guy, it's much worse than just a guy that's taken a couple hundred and put it under his mattress. He not only has destroyed the integrity of the red light cameras, he has, on top of that, possibly forced the state to look for other paths of revenue, which is going to be me, it's going to be you, it's going to be everybody listening, your property taxes. So regardless of whether or not we like proper or red light cameras, seems to me that there is some pain without them. Something to think about. 773 says, put speed cameras in neighborhoods. Unannounced. No good. Most camera tickets are right turns on red. They're not complete stops. They're money grabbers. Because they cause rear-end accidents. Put those cameras in high-crime areas. L trains, Magnificent Mile instead. And 630... says, here's a thought. Learn the rules of the road and follow them. You're absolutely right. Why would we need to follow them when we can just do away with the rules because some state senator took some cash? Yeah, this is good. Good combo. 312-981-7200. All right, coming up, Steve Dolinsky is going to come in. Steve Dolinsky, the Hungry Hound and the food reporter, longtime award-winning food reporter. I believe he's got the most James Beard Awards of any non-chef in the history of life. I'm not sure. I don't know if the 19th century, 18th century James Beard Award winners. I haven't looked at that list. Kid, of course. We'll talk about Restaurant Week. We'll talk about new restaurants. We'll also talk about this the idea that Yelp would put health code violations on their site with Chicago restaurants. Well, that's a good idea. Restaurateurs have a problem with it. Restaurants have a problem with it. And, you know, that's not the most... Here's the issue, I think, at the end of the day. Is it's just not the most up on the up and up website. meaning how many cousins are employed by the managers to be saying this is the best restaurant I've ever eaten in 4 stars. Now you're going to employ your cousin and be like, the one across the way's got rats. Guys across the street, like in Bob's Burgers. The Italian place, Jimmy's, has got rats over there. Tina Belcher's writing it up. Steve Walensky coming up next. We'll also talk about the story that's today is a good story about whether or not you consider Chicago to be part of the Midwest. Is Chicago the Midwest? We'll do that conversation too. 312-981-7200. VIX News up next. 312-981-7200. Justin Kaufman with you till 11 o'clock tonight here on 720 WGN. Like I said, coming up a little bit later in the program, let's talk about whether or not Chicago is part of the Midwest. This is a new story. There was a story that came out from Kerry Lester's team at the Center for Government, Illinois government. It's a great, great place. The story was essentially, why is Illinois blue when all the states around it in the Midwest are red? And not just talking about Chicago. You look at DuPage County in the last election, or Lake County, or even Will County. You're talking, they're going blue. Can you imagine DuPage County going blue? So why is that happening in Illinois, where if you look, the same suburbs of Milwaukee, or what's happening in Ohio, or Wisconsin, or Indiana, they're all going red. And then there was another piece today on Curious City saying, do people consider, in the Midwest, do they consider Chicago part of the Midwest? And the answer, surprisingly, was no. So we'll talk about that. Whether or not you think Chicago's part of the Midwest, we'll have that conversation coming up here on 720 WGN. Well, we're just talking about speed cameras. We talk about just regulation in general. As it goes by the wayside in favor of industry and red tape, they're really what it is. I mean, you've seen this in the Trump administration recently, where it seems like every moment they have that's not relegated to the impeachment is about rolling back some sort of regulation. And that could be good for cutting red tape, but it also could be bad for regulation. In any case, the private sector, the internet, seems to be stepping up. In this story, we're talking about Yelp deciding to publish health code violations on the site when profiling restaurants and searches. Will this change the way you use your restaurant? Will you pick a restaurant and make sure you look at the health code violations? Or is it overkill and bad for business? Because ultimately, we don't understand how the industry works. These could be, everybody might have health code violations. I don't know how it works. One guy who does know how it works, Steve Walensky, the Hungry Hound, ABC 7. He's been a food reporter and I would say personality for years in Chicago. Award winning. Good to see you, buddy.
Good to see you. By the way, I'm not a health inspector.
Yet. That's your next award-winning health inspector.
Yeah. I've never done that. But yeah, I've seen plenty of guys. I've actually been on shoots for ABC and for other people during a health inspection, which is kind of crazy. You can imagine like the chef saying, hey, Steve, hang on 1 second.
1 second.
We're having an inspection right now in the back.
That's not good PR.
Well, it's not their fault. I mean, they're random inspections. They never tell the restaurants when they're going to show up. They just show up. By the way, if you don't have a perfect 100 or a 95, doesn't mean it's a bad restaurant. You know, sometimes you get a violation for there's too much freezer ice in the freezer, or you didn't have everything labeled properly in the date of the cheese, or, you know, little kind of minor infractions, and those get cleared up pretty quickly. It's when you have, like, you know, there's a leak and we saw rodents,
right?
Or, you know, you got to clean up the garbage is everywhere. That's a problem. And so, to your question, originally part of the segment was, I think this is a great idea.
You think it's great?
Because I'm not a Yelp fan at all. I think, you know, the restaurant reviews are bogus.
Almost always bogus, right? They're like, pay a cousin to say this is the greatest restaurant of all time.
Yeah, there's like super Yelpers and advanced Yelpers and elite Yelpers, and I have no idea what that means. But there's no credibility. However, they are getting this from a third party, I believe, that has access to public data, and it's showing you the last several inspections, which I think is great. It shows you what I looked up one place there that I really like at Noble Square, or maybe Westtown, called Nini's Deli, which is fantastic. And they had like a 90, I think, or an 88 or something. I'm like, you know, like two minor infractions a couple months ago. The place is great, though. I mean, I'd eat there every day if I could. So, you know, it's when they have like a 10 or a 15 or a 20 score, then it's like, well, you know what? Maybe I'm going to go somewhere else tonight for dinner. I think it's a good service to have. It's a service journalism.
Will it change the way that people choose restaurants? I mean, will you go to Yelp now and be saying, what kind of food do I want? Where do I want on it and let me look at the health code violation?
You know, that's a good question. I mean, I'm only thinking if I go to some really random place in a strip mall in Stone Park that I've never heard of, you know, I might be curious. But most of the places I'm going to, I mean, I don't know. I guess if I looked at the place and I walk up to the front door and it looks a little sketchy, I might look on Yelp, sure. Right. I might look
You'll
and
hold
see.
The door open and then look at your Yelp on your phone while you're in there?
I've never even thought about looking up a health rating before. The nice thing in California is they put the grade on the front window,
right,
which is great.
And they do that a little bit in New York, too. That's the A and the B's and stuff.
Yeah.
We don't have that here.
We don't. I mean, that might be some lobbying situation. I don't know why they don't do that. If I saw a C out on the front window, I'm probably not going to go in there. I mean, that's a
red flag. Well, there's something to be said. That used to be, I mean, that was the Yelp of the time, and it seemed to be somewhat effective in New York. As you said, if you see a C on the window, and more importantly, I think the restaurant's going to work a lot harder to make sure there's not a C on that window.
Absolutely. They know that any inspection could be any time of the day, and if that inspection does not go well, they're burned, and they're going to lose a lot of business because they're going to have like a C or a subpar rating. So I think, they're always on their toes. In Chicago, there are people with less experience. Like, they don't realize, they need to have, three sinks for washing and cleaning the dishes. Oh, we got to get that fixed. But generally speaking, I think that they're on their toes. I mean, very rarely have I been to a place that is like, yeesh, why did I come here? I don't know.
Well, that's what 773 says. They have the post letter grades in Europe as well. It's all over all the cities in Europe. So it seems like Chicago's just behind times, or like you said, a lobbying situation.
Yeah, we're behind the times on a couple things, not just that.
Well, there has been a lot. Yelp is an interesting and maybe a jump off into restaurants and the digital age, because comments and Yelp, a lot of restaurants don't like it. They don't like that Yelpers are able to say what they want to say about the restaurant without them having any input or say. And you see this with the big chefs. They hate that.
Yeah.
So are they going, they seem to be pushing back. They don't want this stuff online.
They don't. Well, I mean, I think they're all for quality sort of service journalism and, people who are reputable. That's the problem you get into. You don't really know who's reputable and who's not necessarily. And unfortunately, a lot of the criticism now is going toward Instagram and Twitter. And so there's a great piece in the Charlotte, North Carolina magazine. One of the writers is talking about how it's really driven by influencers now, people taking pictures and not really asking any questions. And so restaurants will have a media preview dinner. They'll invite a bunch of people online, and then all they do is take pictures, no questions asked.
Right.
They make it look pretty, and there is no sort of critical eye looking in the restaurants. And so I think your restaurants, they want to have market. They have no money to spend on marketing, first of all. I mean, unless you're Let Us Entertain You or a big company with lots of marketing dollars, you don't have any money to promote your restaurant. So you're looking for any way you can. And so it's nice to have the influencers and Instagrammers come in and take some pictures. But they don't want random Jimmy from Berwyn who came in and said something bad about my pizza. Who's Jimmy?
Right,
and
who's Jimmy, right.
And by the way, did Jimmy's girlfriend used to work at that pizza place and she's pissed that she got fired and now Jimmy's going to like settle the score?
Right.
I mean, that's what a lot of Yelp is, I think.
Yeah.
And so you don't really know what the source is. But if Steve Dolinsky, this guy you've been following for X amount of years, says something about this place, it's going to be pretty good.
I think about that with Instagram a lot, because I'll find myself, my wife does this too, where that will be more deciding factor of looking for the hashtag or possibly to the website or seeing who's tagged it to look at the dishes on whether we're going to that restaurant.
Really?
Yeah, isn't that amazing? The critical doesn't mean anything anymore, because you're at this level where there's so many restaurants that are already at 3 or 4 stars, and now you're just looking at, she's able to look at the restaurant menu and be able to tag, match those up and see the dish in its picture, and also at the same time see the menu.
Well, I got to say, I cop to the fact that I went to a place in Los Angeles a few weeks ago. We were on vacation, and there was a place I'd read about in Echo Park, and I'd seen the pictures on Instagram, and that was one of the reasons it had gotten so popular, because these Japanese sandwiches that they slice in half and they show you the egg in the middle, and it's the whole thing, this production, and it's delicious, but it was definitely visual.
Right.
And a lot of chefs are moving toward that. In fact, I've talked to people who are like, we have to create a dish that people will request because of what it looks like or how it looks or how it's described, as opposed to a restaurant critic saying that it was delicious.
So that's a great question. Are you foregoing the restaurant critic these days? Are you going going straight to social media, to either the site of the restaurant or to the tagged pictures that people have been there. 312-981-7200. Steve Dolinsky is here. He is the Hungry Hound on ABC7. You can check him out Friday nights. You got, when is your schedule? When
well,
are you on
it's
now?
Changed. I'm glad
I
you
swear,
asked.
Every
Friday,
time.
No, it's Fridays at noon.
Okay.
I'm on live.
That's a
and
good
then,
time.
That's a good time, lunchtime. And then Saturday at 10 o'clock.
There you go.
10
Saturday, 10 o'clock news.
That's tough during the college football season because we're on after football, and so right. I'm on really late. But yeah, 10 o'clock on Saturday, Friday at noon.
There you go. Steve Dolinsky is here. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back. Stay with us. We are on the air, 312-981-7200 here on 720 WGN, talking about the restaurant industry, and we're going to talk a little about Restaurant Week and some of the new restaurants that are out now. But before we move on, we're talking about social media and its impact on restaurants, and we're kind of talking about Yelp and you know, moving on past that to Instagram and influencers, all that. You, early adopter of social media and food. You're not a reviewer. You're not
yeah.
a critic, but you've been a food writer and broadcaster for a long time. So you have adopted Twitter. And how has social media changed restaurant going or the restaurant business?
Well, you're able to get a much quicker read on restaurants more than you ever did. In the old days, restaurant critics would wait a couple of weeks. They'd visit at least two times, and then they would sort of write a review about this place after it'd been open for a month. Now, I mean, a friend of mine who writes about food in Chicago went to a place that opened last week on day two. Mm-hmm. And had pictures already on Instagram. And so, and I'm guilty of that too. I do the same thing. I go out early and, I want to get a kind of early read on it. I don't think, it's not fair to say I'm reviewing this restaurant now because I don't do reviews, but I do say, hey, you know what? These are some interesting things that I had. I really like this dish. If you go to the place, get this. I'm not going to give you a full breakdown of the whole menu, but in terms of what's happening with social media now, you're able to see really quickly what's going on in the city or anywhere in the suburbs and, who's out there mm-hmm. and what do they have on their menu and what do I want to check out when I go.
Is that ultimately good or bad for restaurants? Because if you're going on day two and it's not good,
yeah.
they used to give you a little bit of time to get it right, but you just don't have that time anymore.
But I think, but these are people who are not restaurant critics. Like, again, the guy that I'm talking about is a food writer. He covers stuff in the city. It's an early read. And I think people take that with a grain of salt. They know that, okay, it's day two. I'm saying that up front, but these are the things I like. These are the things that maybe need work. I think it's good for a restaurant to hear that right off the bat. What's going on? You're not going to stop them during service and say, hey, excuse me, these are the two things I like. These are the two things you got to work on. But, you post a couple things maybe, and they get an idea of what the semi-pros or the pros are liking. And so maybe you're making some adjustments. But nobody expects to have a full-born, review
right.
Week one. I think it's just not fair. Yeah,
I don't think it's fair either. I just wonder how it's changed, because with the influencers coming in and the ability to get all the glossy coverage that they need up top, do they even need restaurant reviews anymore? Well, do restaurants even need critics to come in and say if the food's good or bad?
I think it helps. And I think a lot of places that the respected places will not have influencers come in, and they will not pay them, and they will not give them free meals in exchange for coverage, because that's just, they don't need to do that, and they have the self-respect and they have right. the confidence in their restaurants. But I think what's happening is that, I think people, when you're looking at, and this is for your listeners, when they're looking at things online, they should take with a grain of salt. If someone's saying great things about this, is there a hashtag sponsor or hashtag ad or hashtag, they've got to disclose if they're being paid or getting freebies.
Do they have to do that?
Now, a lot of people don't, or they bury it. Also, look at that person's feed. Like, do they only say great things about chain restaurants, or do they mix it up? Do they go to small independent places in strip malls and Niles, or do they only do River North, big splashy restaurants? I mean, that kind of tells you something right there.
Right.
If they're only going to the big production places and only saying great things about them, chances are they're just getting invited and they're getting free meals, and that's the exchange.
Steve Dolinsky with me. He's a Hungry Hound. You can find him on ABC7. He's always on Fridays and Saturdays, Friday at noon, Saturdays at 10. Longtime restaurant reporter. I wouldn't say reporter. What do you call yourself?
Food reporter.
Food reporter, yeah.
I do drinks. I do all kinds of stuff. Pizza.
What's your style? Like, are you a kind of guy that wants to go in the first week, or are you always paying attention to the new restaurants that are coming out?
Used to really care more about it, and I used to had this sort of, I'd get into arguments on Twitter with people, and like, I got older and I got mellower. I'm like, why do I need to do that? I mean, just don't even go there. But in terms of like my professional side of it, I do want to go early just to see what it's like.
Yeah.
And then if there's one or two things that I like, even if I have a bad experience, at least side note, I want to come back and give this another chance. And that's usually what happens. I'll usually go to a place once or twice. You know, I got to give people a break. Everybody has a bad night. Everybody, it's early jitters. I understand. Mm-hmm. But I'm really looking to go early just to kind of get a sense for it. And really, for what I'm looking for ABC is what can I latch on to here that would be an interesting story. So like last week, great example, went to four places in one night. A couple of them were Guatemalan and sort of Central American and Salvadorian. And I found this one chicken dish called pepian that I'm going to do a story on. I'm shooting it on Thursday at two places. They both do this dish called pepian, and I'm going to show you what it is and how it's made.
So
that's what I'm looking for.
You're always leading with your curiosity. That's what I always love about you. That you're not afraid to go into places that aren't on the beaten path and off the beaten path. I don't know. There's just something about you're always looking for curiosity in food that people don't know about.
Because it's a huge region. I mean, you know, when I moved to Chicago 25 years ago, I was just overwhelmed with how big the city was. I'm originally from Minnesota. And I thought, you know, there's Devon Avenue on the north side, and there's interesting Italian community in Harlem. But then you really, like, there's Indians in Schaumburg and Naperville, and there's, you know, this Middle Eastern community in Oaklawn. And that's what was so fascinating to me. And so, yeah, I'm constantly driving around the city, you know, craning my neck, looking at awnings, you know, what looks interesting to me. And my wife gives me a hard time all the time. She's like, look at the road. Stop turning left and right. But that's what's so cool about Chicagoland, right? I mean, it's so vast. So it's way more than, and I think, you know, unfortunately, a lot of people just stick to West Town, West Loop, River North, and I get a lot of coverage in the local magazines. But man, there is so much beyond that. And so that's kind of what I you know, sort of put my feather in my cap. Like, I'm trying to do more than that.
312-981-7200. You can tell Steve where he should go next. How about that?
Tell me. Absolutely.
He'll listen for sure. The Restaurant Week is this week. We hear a lot about this.
Yeah, it's actually 2 weeks. Goes through for February 9th.
It's this false advertising.
It should be restaurant week, parenthetically. Okay. So this is the slowest time of year in the restaurant industry. You know, in January, after the first year, everybody's saving their money because they spent it all in December. And so the restaurant industry really has a tough time. They have the same bills, they have the same rent and same mortgage and same labor costs, right? So they're trying to offer deals to people to get them in the door. It's usually $24, I think, for lunch, maybe $36 for dinner, sometimes $48 for dinner, depending on the place. It's a great way to sample the restaurants in Chicagoland. More than 400 are participating this year, which is incredible. We're going to put the information on your website, but it's basically choosechicago.com. This is the city's tourism or has them all.
Yeah.
And, you know, don't just take them at face value. You do want to look, let's say you want to go to a Vec, which I love their menu, by the way, and it's a great restaurant in West Loop. Just look online, look at their menu, just to make sure, like, if an entree is 17 and appetizer is 8, and, you know, then it makes sense to pay $36 for, you know, dinner maybe. But, like, if you look at, do some of the numbers, do some math, because not every place is a great deal. But there are great restaurants like, what was the one? Hai Su in Pilsen is a fantastic modern Vietnamese restaurant. Tai Deng there is brilliant. Big Jones up in Andersonville, fantastic fried chicken, very much in the southern tradition, in sort of that Edna Lewis cookbook tradition. Abba, kind of a hot place in where all the cool kids go in West Loop. They've also great, great restaurant week menus. So, but go to Choose Chicago and check out all of them. Yeah.
It is true, because this weekend we went out for my mom's birthday, and it was at Trulux, which is the seafood place on Rush Street.
Oh yeah.
And
how was it?
It was good. It was really good. They're, you know, we knew them from Florida because we would go down to Naples when our son was, you know, yay big. And that's, we went there and we're like, oh my God, they came to Chicago. So it's a different dining experience, but it's the same kind of food.
Also about high margin item though, because seafood is going to be pricier. Mm-hmm. And so if you can get a deal for $36 or for $48 for dinner, then it might be worth going to get Alaskan King Crab or something.
The deal was an appetizer, one of those Alaskan King Crab type specials, and then a dessert. And so I found myself, because I did the same thing you just talked about. I found out that I would rather do off the menu. I don't need it. And then I also found myself late last night eating leftover key lime pie.
So nice.
It was nice. That feels so good in the morning when you're like, why did I just golf that down? But
you're young. It's okay. Live a little. Look, Alaskan King Crab, that is for sure something I would get at Restaurant Week, because that is a high margin item. And it's in season right now, too, which is fantastic.
Yeah. 219 says, you ever go to Indiana?
I do. Not enough. I do. Yes, I've been to Whiting, and I've had some pierogi, and there's a good Polish community over there in Northwest Indiana, and there's some great little joints, and I've done stuff in Valpo, and but dude, I am all ears. If you think there's a great place in Indiana, you know, let me know. You can go to my website, stevedolinsky.com, and just contact me there, And I get a lot of tips that way, actually. Somebody tipped me off to a place recently I went to go check out. So, yeah, there's a place in Indiana. Let me know.
I would think that in this day and age, because of all the communities we talk about, whether it's Valpo or Chesterton, which is nearby, or even some of the areas you just mentioned, Oak Lawn and like, that everybody is really investing in local. And you'll get these community restaurants or restaurants that come in that might be the fine dining spot for that specific town. It never ends. It just never ends. My mother-in-law lives in Valpo, and every time I go out, she's like, we got a new spot. It's crazy.
Wait, is that Spanish place still there, by the way?
Yeah, it is.
It was a Don Quixote?
I think so.
Oh, my God. Yeah, the billboards on the highway. I mean, every 5 minutes. No, I know there are great gems in those towns. I mean, Valpo's a cool town, too, but I like there's all of a sudden, like in the middle of nowhere, there's this interesting little main street and there's some good restaurants. Yeah. So I just, again, I would love to know about places. I tend not to do chains. I tend not to do just, you know, burgers and steaks. And if it's a pasta place, and I get a lot of references for Italian, they got to be making stuff in-house. Mm-hmm. Like Muno up in Uptown or Tortello in Wicker Park. You know, they're making everything from scratch. That's what I want to see. I want to see the artisan making the stuff, not just opening a box of dried pasta.
Right. This person is a Super Pita on Milwaukee between Devon and Tui. Is a spot you should check out. And Captain's House, which is in Indiana. Didn't say where.
Oh,
just throwing them out at you.
That's what I do. All right.
I'm able to get the listeners, my listeners, to be able to just shout at you.
Yeah, harness the power of the GN audience and tell the hungry hand where to go.
All right. You got a list of new restaurants?
I got a couple.
Okay, why don't we do this? Why don't we take a quick break and we'll come back. Steve Dolinsky is here. The Hungry Hound at 720 WGN. All right, 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Steve Dolinsky, the Hungry Hound, who can be found at ABC 7 here in Chicago, both to Fridays at noon and Saturdays at 10 p.m. Been covering the food scene here, a food reporter for how many years? 25 years now?
25. Last week, actually, was my 25th anniversary.
How about that?
I started at the Tribune Company doing a show called Good Eating.
CLTV.
I was at CLT before that, right. So it's Good Eating started 25 years ago this last week, and then 17 years ago went to ABC 7.
I started 17 years. That's crazy.
Amazing.
That's amazing.
I mean,
cool.
You were a toddler.
I was. Congratulations.
Thank you.
On making it this far, 25 years. We talk about new restaurants. Before we do that, one of the big things happening in food, and I don't hear it a lot, but I know that people are reporting on it. With the coronavirus, this is the Lunar New Year. This is the Chinese New Year that just started, and I would assume a lot of different restaurants and a lot of different Chinese places in the area were changing their plans from what they first wanted to do based on what's happening.
Yeah, and in fact, this Saturday there was supposed to be a big event at the Harris Theater that Tony Hu, the unofficial mayor of Chinatown, was organizing. It just got canceled because they're just so worried about everything related to China right now and people coming from China. And you know, there was one case I think in Illinois already. Mm-hmm. So, in terms of the restaurants, I was in Chinatown on Friday night. By the way, Chef Jiang is the name of the restaurant I went to. It was like 2100 South Archer. Excellent. And the chef used to work at some well-known restaurant, too. But it was moderately busy. It wasn't totally packed. But it is Chinese New Year. And so usually Chinatown is hopping, and there's, you know, the parade and everything.
Yeah.
I didn't get this sense. And it was also, weather was terrible Friday. But I didn't get the sense that there was this celebratory mood at all. People are really nervous and on edge, I think. Mm. So it's too bad. Because
it's a big time. It's obviously the New Year, but it's also a big time for restaurants and for getting together and things like that.
Yeah, although people in Chicago aren't getting their import. You know, they're not importing produce from Wuhan. They're not getting stuff directly from China, and the guests here are Chicagoans for the most part, so you know they shouldn't worry about it. I mean, Chinatown in Chicago is safe. Let's just say that. I mean, no problem eating on Friday like a king, so it was great.
Well, there you go. 312-981-7200 is our phone number. Steve Dolinsky is here. Let's talk about some new restaurants. 2019, man, I saw all the restaurants that closed in 2019. It was a bad year.
This is, you told me
one time, and I'll never forget this, and that it stuck with me from the years we've worked together, that it is a unbelievable feat for a restaurant the last 5 years in Chicago.
Yeah.
That was the thing. That was the going rate. Is that still the case? Is that still the mantra in the restaurant business?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, it's a shame to see, like, Semitas Puebla, which is a beloved place that just closed down this past week. And they maybe have overexpanded, but they shut down all their locations. They made a fantastic Mexican sandwich from Oaxaca. And it just, like, little places like that you really want to root for and see succeed. And when they close, you're just like, gosh, you know, what happened? Of course, you never really know the story. Like Quixote, which is a great Mexican-ish place that was in Logan Square, they closed last year. And it just, yeah, 5 years is a milestone if you can make it that long. People also are kind of fickle in Chicago. You know, places in Chicago are hot for a couple of months, and then it's like crickets. Mm. Like, you know, you couldn't get into Green Street Smoked Meats for a long time, and then, you know, now you walk in on a Wednesday night, and you can just kind of stroll right in. It just depends. The press loves to jump on places and talk about the same places, and then they sort of move on to the next shiny, bright thing. So, I think you make it 5 years, that, you know, good for you. But, you know, I'm always just trying to promote the little guys, too. I mean, I don't think the big restaurant groups need a lot of promotion. Although, you know, RPM Seafood just opened up on the river in this glorious building over here in the River North area. But there are a lot of other little places. Like Lao Peng Yu is a great example.
Lao Peng Yu.
It's at 2020 West Chicago. So Chicago and Damon. Just a couple of second-generation kids doing dumplings and homemade noodles and really simple Chinese dishes. If you want to go to a place kind of to get into the spirit of Chinese New Year and not have to go to Chinatown, this is a great little neighborhood joint. Everything's made from scratch, really reasonable prices too. Just really charming. Only open, I think, Thursday through Sunday. So only like 4 days a week. But they're really doing it the right way. Another place out in Palatine, the Dream Place. This is not a sleeping store or a mattress store.
It's mattress store by day.
Yes.
And then it turns into a nice restaurant.
Dreams of Szechuan peppercorns by night. Really fantastic Szechuan food. That was my story on ABC this past Saturday, but I was doing a series on great Chinese places outside of Chinatown, like D'Angela's Dumplings in Libertyville, or Katie's Dumplings in Westmont and Oak Park, and then this place, the Dream Place in Palatine, which I thought was just fantastic on Dundee. Mm. Really a surprise, and somebody tipped me off on Instagram, and I went that day and loved it. Not a Chinese place, but a fun place, Japanese-ish place, is right at the Green Line stop at Morgan, right underneath the train. It's called Gaijin, which means foreigner in Japanese. This is from Paul Verant, who has V out in Western Springs.
Yeah, right.
You know, he's one of the original sort of local Chicago chefs.
OG, right?
Yeah, he's an OG.
Right.
Gaijin is his homage, his sort of love letter to Osaka, and a particular dish called okonomiyaki, which is a pancake. But it's a Japanese pancake, and it's got cabbage and maybe pork or chicken or beef, whatever you want, and then this sort of QP mayonnaise and an okonomiyaki sauce, which is kind of like an A1, and then dried nori, which is seaweed, or katsuobushi or bonito, which is like a smoked and dried skipjack tuna across the top of it. It's a delicious dish. It's got lots of umami,
wow,
which is that fifth sense, that savory sense. Gaijin, a lot of fun. Drink beers, Toki highballs, really good stuff.
You are always championing the Asian cuisine in this area. No, I mean, you really seem to have an affinity for it. Where's that come from? That you are, because you cover all foods, and you're Mr. Pizza, of course, as well. But when it comes to Asian cuisine, you are all over it.
I think I've just always been intrigued by the cuisine. I think I grew up in northern Minnesota. Ate a lot of hearty, heavy Scandinavian and German food and Polish and sort of Eastern European. And so when I got to Chicago and discovered like the umami, the sort of soy, the noodles, the way that things are plated, just really delicateness of a lot of this food, a lot of herbs used in Vietnamese cooking, just things that were so beguiling to me, I've just kind of fallen in love with
You're
it.
Like, sign me up.
Yeah. If I were
civilization.
People are always like, oh, pizza's your favorite food, right? Because I write about pizza and I got a pizza tour. I'm like, you know what? I think if I had to say Korean barbecue. Korean's my thing.
Is there a food right now? We'll get back to this in a second, but is there a food? It seems like every 6 months, Chicago gets into a craze over one type of food or another.
Fried chicken sandwiches.
Exactly. Where are we at right now? I mean, it's January, so it's light, but do you have a feeling that the hot thing right now is going to be?
Well, you know, two years ago it was ramen, but now we're seeing a brand new ramen place from Japan opening up in Des Plaines called Chicago Ramen, and another new place just opened in Lincoln Square called Menya Ramen, I think, from the guys from Wasabi. So you're seeing ramen come on again, but then you're also seeing the fried chicken places. Fry the Coop opened up another place in the city, and then there's Roost, of course, and there's Honey Butter Fried Chicken, and you see a lot of fried chicken sandwich places. And then, you know, the trend really is food halls. That is the trend. Not necessarily one particular cuisine, but the idea of eating with a dozen options right in front of you. Revival food hall, the Time Out Market, there's a brand new one that the Cornicks have just opened up in the South Loop. There's a Cook County food hall coming online near UIC and Rush Hospital pretty
soon. The one in Sears Tower is coming up?
Right, that's where Rick Bayless has got his Tortaza concept, which is his partnership with the guys from Jollibee in the Philippines. But yes, the Sears Tower, or Willis Tower. So there's a lot of food halls.
Sears.
I call it Sears.
We'll call it Sears.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
We don't...
Exactly. Comiskey.
So formal here,
I go to Comiskey, too. So I just, the food hall thing is definitely the right. trend in Chicago right now. Because it's a great play by realtors. You get an advantage for tenants, you know, something that's kind of a draw.
Yeah, and it's cool. It's a good concept because it's, especially like the timeout market one where you're in the middle. The only problem I have with it is it's just so damn expensive.
Well, the timeout is a little bit of an expensive place. Yes, I agree. Like $6 for a slice of pizza there. Not a very good one.
But it's the least of my... If I got a $6 anything out of there, I'd be like, hallelujah.
Yeah.
It feels like everything's 12 and up.
Yeah, I agree. It's that they're getting some pushback from that. Now, listen, they do have some of the best chefs in town, I think. They did a great job of curating that. But it's an expensive proposition. It's a little bit like... I don't want to say ADD generation, but it's like, you know, people who can't make up their minds, or you want to have a lot of choices, you want to customize things. You go to a hall like that, you can have vegan, you can have sushi, you can have whatever you want, soup, whatever your needs are satisfied. By the way, a great Italian beef in that timeout market from Decent Beef from Kevin Hickey, proud product of Bridgeport and the Duck Inn. He's doing a great Italian beef there, and along with his hot dogs too.
Steve Dolinsky is here, the Hungry Hound. He's ABC 7 on Fridays at noon and Saturdays at 10. We're talking restaurants and, of course, food here on the program. I'm always blown away by the trends and everything because you're on top of all this stuff. And I wonder, because I don't have you on enough, but you know, at least once a year.
Yes.
But last time we talked, I think there was this thought about where Chicago was as a food town. Because when I first came over here and we were talking, we're like, Chicago is it. Rahm Emanuel brought in the James Beard Awards. This was going to be the high fine dining capital of the world, and it should be, and all the great restaurants, and this is it. Yeah. And now, are we still there? Because last year you were like, it's waning.
Well, I think we should be clear that just because you bring the Beard Awards to your city doesn't mean it's a great food city. That doesn't equal great food city. It's basically you were able to get the biggest check written to bring the awards here.
Right, right.
So that doesn't mean you're a great food city. Now, that said, Chicago's an amazing food city. Our problem is that we don't have enough we don't have multiples. You know, we've got like two Persian restaurants. We've got, you know, three or four omakases, which are where you do the sort of the Japanese chef designed menu. We don't have a ton of stuff like LA or New York. And then, of course, unlike LA, where they've got the seasons are just always bursting with strawberries and, you know, beautiful produce. We don't have that either. So it's a very limited window here. You're looking at like, you know, a month or two of strawberries. You're looking at a month of tomatoes, although Mighty Vine now and Roselle provides tomatoes year-round. But it's a little trickier in Chicago because of the weather. And I will say people are drawn to Chicago because it's more affordable. You cannot afford to live in New York or San Francisco. And even LA is getting to be difficult. So you're finding a lot of talent now relocating to Chicago. I love the fact that John and Karen Shields opened up Smith here. You know, they used to work at Trotters, then they were on the East Coast, and they came back to Chicago.
I didn't know that.
You know, David Posey was at Blackbird for several years. He and his wife opened up Elsk in the West Loop. So you find people staying in Chicago. The guy who owns SKY in Pilsen, he was going to go to LA with his wife. He was doing an incubator with Let Us Entertain You for a while, Intro, and then they decided, you know what, LA is too expensive. We're going to stay in Chicago, make this our home, and they invested in a place on 18th Street, and they built SKY, and it's a fantastic sort of, I don't want to say Korean-ish restaurant, but his wife's Korean, and so it's a little bit of that, but it's a kind of, I don't know, it's just a creative American menu, and I just think that that's one of the reasons Chicago beats these other cities is because we are a place of experimentation, right? We've got Alinea, we used to have Moto, even Trotters started here so many years ago. People here love to try things. You know, the theaters always come here, the Broadway shows come here to do tryouts, right?
Mm-hmm.
So this is the place that we want to work out the kinks. So this is a place that is up for experimentation, whether it's architecture or theater or food.
The one thing we have, and we beat all those places on, is pizza.
Yep.
And you are continuing with the pizza tours and just being Mr. Pizza.
Pizza City USA, pizza baby. PizzaCityUSA.com.
I love it. What's up with that? I mean, there are new pizza places coming online, or
yes.
are we at the point where...
No.
No, we haven't.
No, here's the thing. My book came out over a year and a half ago. There are six places I wish I could include in that book now. Places like Bob's Pizza in Pilsen, or Grateful Bites in Winnetka, or Roebuck Pizza in Lakeview, or even like on Mondays, tonight is pizza night at Ludlow Liquors up on California. The only place I know of doing a proper New York style Sicilian that is really crunchy in the undercarriage underneath, like you'd find at a DeFara in Brooklyn. Mm-hmm. I mean, really unique pizza that we didn't have up until recently. And so, again, these guys are like this. The guy at Ludlow worked at Middlebrow Bungalow, which has a fantastic pizza also, which I should have mentioned. and then he left to go to Ludlow, and he's doing a fantastic Sicilian now. And Roebuck is doing an all-natural fermentation, all-natural starter that they feed every day to give you that beautiful crumb in the middle of the crust. So there's a lot of places that have opened. I'm telling you, Grateful Bites in Winnetka, if I live in the North Shore, I'd be there once a week. It's a fantastic pizza place nobody knows about.
Did you see the online, the little meme that was going around about the tavern-style pizza, and they put the numbers on
yeah,
the pieces?
Yeah, like
which
the Subway
would
seats.
You grab?
Yeah,
which one did you would you go for? Are you a corner guy? You go get the...
I get the corner. I don't get the little tiny triangle. I get the sort of the medium one, because I want to have like equal... I want ratio. I want equal amounts of crust and middle. I would never go for the only middle piece. That's right. An amateur move.
That's an amateur move.
I mean, come on.
You've always been a guy about ratio. That's what I like about you.
OBR, so, optimal bite ratio. That's my mantra. I tried to trademark OBR, and I talked to an attorney, and he's like, you can't do that.
You can't do it.
Optimal bite ratio, though, is such a great term.
Why not? That's perfect.
It's not unique enough.
It's not unique.
It's got to be like Steve's optimal bite ratio or something ridiculous. Yeah. But anyway, come on a pizza tour, pizzacityusa.com.
There you go. Steve Dolinsky, you can find him on TV at ABC7. You can find him online at stevedolinsky.com, and, of course, the pizza tours as well. Great to see you, man. And
you too.
Let's not make it every year. Let's make it every year and 2 months. That'd be great.
Sounds great. Works for me.
So great to have Steve Dolinsky. Always love when he comes in. Steve and I go way back. We, gosh, man, I produced Steve Dolinsky when I was, I want to say, under 21 years old.
Wow.
Yeah, I think I was like 20, maybe 21, 22. I just started producing at public radio, and he was working at CLTV, and he sent me a demo or some sort, and he's like, hey, maybe we can do radio. And we went down and we did a couple of pieces that was so much fun to do together. And he ended up doing a bunch of stuff. And we produced together for years. I won whenever I talk about winning the James Beard, it was with Steve. Yeah. So that's, it's kind of fun. It's great memories. And it's always great to be able to get him to come back in. So that's awesome. So great to have him. All right, 312-981-7200. He's also got great recommendations. He's just all the restaurants and all the different spots and all the different towns. He's like a he's like a positive motor mouth. You get the vibe. You're like, all right, guy. But he's telling you all these great things. You're like, oh my gosh, I got to get a pen. He's got a list. I have a list. We could put it up on the website of all the different places he was talking about tonight. 312-981-7200. Very interesting conversation about influencers and about the impact that social media has had. And as you think about it, restaurants today, they don't have money. There's no overhead for marketing. Like Steve said, unless you're talking about the downtown restaurants, the big restaurant groups where it's baked in, you just don't have it. If you're a storefront, if you're a brand new startup, if you're a mom and pop place in the community. So you can understand why people definitely want to get people to take pictures of their stuff for free. But at the same time, I think they'd be wary about who's taking those pictures or who's doing those reviews, because who knows, right? Yeah, if the health code violations are going to Yelp and it's being brought in by a third party, I guess I'm okay with that. If it's a third party, if it's actually sort of consumer journalism based, I would have no problem with that. Anyway, all right, coming up, let's talk about whether or not Chicago is the Midwest. Right? It's a no-brainer when you first think about it. But there have been a couple of stories this week that have referenced why Illinois and Chicago specifically is an outlier when it comes to the sensibilities of the Midwest. We're hearing so much about the Midwest because of the 2020 elections, right? There are nonstop conversations about, well, you know, how's the Midwest going to vote? You know, they voted for Trump last time. And sitting in this radio station studio at the mouth of the Chicago River, I always assume they're talking about us, talking about me, talking about you. But a new piece today came out saying, is there a difference? Is the Midwest, when the Washington fat cats, the Hollywood fat cats, when they're talking about the Midwest with a capital M. They're not talking. Are they talking about us? Are they talking about Chicago? Do you think Chicago is part of the Midwest? Do you think it's not? There's a lot of pieces. This piece of Jesse Dukes, a great reporter who was with Curious City. He did a great piece today just about trying to answer that question. Curious City's been doing this for a while where they take listeners' questions and then they report them out. Someone asked the question, is Chicago part of the Midwest? And he went on the street here in Chicago and he went to other different places like around the area and he asked it, and surprisingly, most people said no. That they don't consider the Midwest to be regional. That Midwest means sensibilities. That Midwest means social and political perspectives. So there's a difference between if you are living in a neighborhood in Chicago and as opposed to a small town in Wisconsin. Now there's some pushback to that, and it's in his piece as well, where some people say, no, I went to New York for business, or I went to LA and lived my life in the entertainment industry or whatever. You can tell the difference between someone who lives on the East Coast and someone who lives in Chicago. That Chicago, even though it may have its differences when it comes to the sensibilities of, say, Janesville, it also shares more with Janesville than, say, New York City or Boston or Washington, D.C. or Florida. That we are the Midwest. We may be different parts of the Midwest, but collectively we're all together. That if you live in San Francisco or Santa Barbara or Los Angeles or San Diego, you don't notice a difference between someone who lives in Chicago or someone who lives in Janesville. But us and someone who lives in Lakeview in Chicago and someone who lives in, I don't know, La Crosse will probably say that they don't feel like they come from the same place. So let's have that combo, right? Do you think Chicago is part of the Midwest? 312-981-7200. Talk about that coming up here in the 9 o'clock hour. 312-981-7200. I'm torn. I want to say Midwest because, you know, I grew up, and I talk about this a lot. I grew up in Wonder Lake, Illinois, in McHenry County. That's Midwest to me. That is Midwest sensibility, but I always felt that Midwest meant monsters of the Midway. That downtown Chicago was our capital. That it was the big city on the lake that anchored all the other big cities on the lake, on the lakes, whether it be Cleveland or Milwaukee. Not Green Bay, but Green Bay's he kicked them out of the Midwest. So I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe that's why I want to hear from you if you don't live in Chicago. If you live out west or you live up north or even down south and you're like, hey, I'm in northwest Indiana, where you're like, no, I don't think of myself. I think of myself as a Midwesterner, and that doesn't include you. I want to hear that. Because at a certain point, and that's what some of the articles are reading this week, is just trying to figure out why the state of Illinois, which is always at the epicenter, regionally at the epicenter, of the Midwest, is always blue. And I'm talking about blue and red for politics. And you look at the rest of the Midwest, Wisconsin, Indiana, Missouri, Iowa. Minnesota is an outlier, but you look at all those states and you say, oh yeah, those are red states. Now obviously Chicago is a pretty liberal place, but I would assume Milwaukee is as well. I would say most of the urban centers are, maybe Cleveland. Not sure about Indianapolis, St. Louis. So I know that there's going to be so many people who will call in and say, no, we are the Midwest. But I wonder. That's going to be the conversation tonight, the 9 o'clock hour. 312-981-7200. Enlighten me. I think that I'm sure. I know people call up. Let's go to Mary right before we go to the break here. Mary, is Chicago part of the Midwest?
Well, I think of it as sort of the bad, glamorous, tough Midwest as opposed to the rolling little towns and yeah. history of.
They can't be the same. They're different.
They're different. Yeah.
Well, that's true. It's almost like a rural and an urban, right?
Right.
But you still think they're both the Midwest.
Yeah, they are. It's the Midwest. I mean, it's geographic too. I mean, it's the flatness of the countryside and the lake, and it's a geographic thing to me too. We're right in the middle of the country.
Thanks, Mary. Thanks for calling.
Mm-hmm.
All right, the lines are lighting up. I wonder if we have to make a distinction, and I think that's what people are going to call up and talk about. Chicago is absolutely the Midwest, says 630. Whether you're from a metropolitan area in Illinois or the cornfields, we're all the Midwest. Yeah, I wondered, but that the question is that the way that the Midwest is being portrayed when it comes to politics or elections, it's becoming less about region or just, you know, circling on a map and more about sensibility. So when there's books about the Midwest or why Trump won the Midwest, are they talking about Chicago? I don't think they are. Chicago rarely gets referenced, even in the Rust Belt. You need to talk about the Rust Belt and the old Rust Belt industries and cities. Chicago rarely gets referenced in that stuff. Anyway, we'll talk about it here coming up. Also tonight, a little bit later, I know we don't necessarily want to get into sports radio, but a huge development in baseball today where umpires are going to get mic'd up. So when they go over and they look at the replay and then they say, that's a home run. Now they're going to be like NFL referees where they're going to turn on their mic and say, after looking at the replay, that is a home run. And everyone's going to freak out. Maybe they'll leave the mic on while they're chewing their big league chew. We'll just hear them do mouth noises. We'll talk about that. And what looks to be an inevitable conclusion that there will be a designated hitter in the National League. Ooh, that's a hot topic. Hot topic. Justin Kaufman, hot topics at night. But first, let's talk about whether or not Chicago is the Midwest. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. We'll get to that conversation after Vic's news, which is coming up right here at the top of the hour. Like I said, we're on until 11 o'clock tonight. Nick DiGilio coming up after us. But right now, let's get to Vic's news, and then we'll have the conversation about the Midwest. So stay with us. 312-981-7200. Justin Kaufman with you here. Talking about whether or not Chicago is part of the Midwest. There was a piece that was in the Center for Illinois Politics talking about the growth of suburban Democrats and how, really, when you look at the Midwest, the only blue state is the state of Illinois. And yes, you say that's because of Chicago and the population here, and I totally understand that. But the breakdown here showed much more Democrat voters in DuPage and Lake County than I've ever seen in my lifetime. That plus a piece that Curious City did today talked about, is Chicago part of the Midwest? And surprisingly, Jesse Dukes, great reporter who asked a question and got it answered, talking to people on the street in Chicago and in the area, the answer was no. That's hard to believe. That's what that was right from his piece. Let's talk to Kurt. Kurt, is Chicago part of the Midwest?
I would think when you're talking politics that it would not be at this point. Mm. Now, I'll give you a little background. I grew up in Elgin.
Okay.
I went to school up in a small town in Stevens Point, in Wisconsin.
University of Wisconsin in Green Bay? Or Stevens Point?
Stevens Point, correct.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then I have spent probably more half my life now in Milwaukee. Now, I still have roots in Chicago, so I have roots in Elgin, and I have a whole bunch of roots here in Milwaukee. It just, when you talk politics, we've changed now. It seems like Midwest. Now, we all know we're from the Midwest. Chicago is part of the Midwest. But when you talk politics, it seems like Midwest has now turned to the rural areas. Mm-hmm. It doesn't seem like they're referring to the larger cities like Milwaukee and Chicago anymore.
Right.
It seems like they're referring to these outlining suburbs.
Am I the only one? I will ask you, Kurt. Am I the only one who's annoyed by that? I feel like it's divisive by Washington and the press there, and obviously the politicians, both parties, to determine that the Midwest doesn't mean what we think it means.
Oh, it's very discouraging, and it's our identity. People know us as some of the hardest working people across the country, My daughter's going to Columbia College. The West Coast loves Columbia College students because they know their work ethic. We have this, you know, this ingrained in us work ethic. We're people who work hard for what we do. We're pretty honest people. We're we work hard to try and better our communities we're in. I think that that's something we still have, but politically, they seem to really degrade us a lot by saying, well, there's the city, and then there's the other people. And I just find like that, that just, it's very discouraging because we know the truth. Who and what we are, and we're proud of that.
Absolutely. Thanks, Kurt. That's great. Great call. I appreciate that. 815 says Chicago not part of the Midwest, at least not socially, politically, and value-wise. Well, value-wise. I think you're starting a sticky wicket when you start saying you've got the when you talk about values, because I think there's people in Chicago share the sentiment or the same values. Kurt said it, and I think we're on to something. I think we're letting, in some goofy way, we're letting politicians in Washington, both parties, and we're letting the press, especially press that covers Washington, D.C., recategorize us to say that there are two Midwests, or that we're not talking about Chicago or Milwaukee or Cleveland when we say the Midwest. They're redefining the term, and we're not part of that conversation. I don't like that. Because, yes, there's going to be different voting blocks. There always has been. To act like that's new is ridiculous. This has been something this... I could go back 100 years to look at the difference between people who are voting in maybe Wisconsin or in rural areas and how they're voting in urban areas. But that has never gotten in the way of determining whether or not we're all one Midwest. Right? You can have both. And I think most communities, if you're talking about the Northeast, they have both. When they say Northeast, they're not saying only Western Massachusetts. They're not dividing their own territories. But they'll gladly divide ours. I don't like it. Chicago now illustrates secularism. No reverence to the Constitution, no respect for God. That's what Donald says. I don't, again, that's such a swath. That's such a weird thing to say to a lot of God-fearing, God-valued people. I know some great families in this area and people who go to all the churches. There are a million churches in Chicago. I feel like that's straight up from some playbook. That's like a political consultant's playbook to say that. Because you don't see eye to eye with someone who lives in Chicago because they believe in a political issue that you don't. I don't know. At some point or another, we got to all kind of have a Midwest Constitutional Convention. We all come together and recognize that we're not that different. And I don't feel comfortable at all being the guy who represents people who live in Chicago. I live in Chicago, but I don't want to represent them, nor do I want to represent, even though with my Wonder Lake roots, want to represent people who live in the rural areas. But I'll tell you, as someone who's lived in both, that I feel pretty connected to it. I feel like the Midwest, when I hear the Midwest, they're talking about me. So I get a little bit unnerved when I see pieces about whether or not Chicago is part of the Midwest. But it was real. And you've heard tonight from Kurt. You've heard from a couple of texters. They agree. They don't consider Chicago to be part of the Midwest. And I guess that's because the powers that be, in this case, have done a good job of rewriting or recoding what Midwest means. 312-981-7200. 847 says they can't continue to redefine Midwest just to meet politics. I totally agree. 630 says, I don't buy it. How often do you start a conversation with someone you don't know and they ask you how you voted? That's coming up. That's in the next 10 years. You know that's going to happen. Hey, how's it going? Hey, where are you from? How do you vote? Can I ask you a quick question on these 10 hot topics? When it comes to pharmaceutical companies, how do you vote? When it comes to reproductive issues, how do you vote? But it's true. It's the last thing they're going to bring up this is 630, is the controversy of whether you're a red state or blue state. It just doesn't happen. People still say, oh, you're from the Midwest. I completely agree. I think the premise, though, and what I think these articles are getting at, is that there seems to be a disconnect between rural Midwest and urban Midwest. And that's, I think he's got Richard Longworth, a great, used to be Chicago Tribune reporter. I think he's retired. He's working somewhere else now. He wrote a book about the Midwest. And Jesse's got this in his piece in Curious City. And he says in the piece that back in the, a while back, I don't know when, you know, half a century ago, there was a ecosystem that fed off each other, that the rural areas of the Midwest and the urban areas of the Midwest all had to work together. The Board of Trade was in Chicago, so the farmers needed the Board of Trade to set the prices. The farmers would bring their cows and their livestock to the stockyards in Chicago. It was all part of an ecosystem. And over time, a lot of this has to do with the Rust Belt and the disintegration of our own Midwest economy. Those towns that relied on the city of Chicago, the disconnect happened where the Board of Trade doesn't do that. There's no stockyard anymore. Chicago moved on to a more, I don't know, big city economy, technology, marketing, things like that, that there is no use in smaller towns for. And therefore the disconnect, that there are, actually he does argue, there are two Midwests. And maybe that has a lot to do with what's happening when they classify. I just think it's lazy. I think at the end of the day, it's just more laziness from the coasts to try and classify politically what's happening in the middle of the country. Let's go to Penny. Penny, what do you think? Is Chicago part of the Midwest?
Yes, we are, and I'm real tired of those East Coast snobs calling us flyover country.
I love it. Benny, I love it. And, I love the enthusiasm.
And, you know, I live in Lansing. You don't have to go too far south on I-57 where I'm afraid to say I'm from Chicago area.
Really? You go down there and you feel ashamed about it?
I feel scared. they can get really hostile.
They get hostile.
But I think you're right, though. I think there's a difference between urban and suburban and downstate. But that's been going on for years. That's not new.
Yeah, that's what I said. I feel the same way, Penny, that that's not new. It seems, though, that someone is, and I don't know, like I said, I'm not blaming on one party or another, but there has been a clear delineation to try and divide those that they're not the same anymore.
I think you're right. Thank you for taking my call.
Thanks, Penny.
Bye-bye.
Bye. I love it. Penny bringing the heat. She's angry. She's got a lot of passion for those East Coast snobs. I love it. Take a break here. Come back. Continue. 312-981-7200. Are we on to something? Do we need to get a voicemail for a consultant, political consultant down in D.C.? And we'll call him up live on the air. Leave a message. Hey, this is Justin and the Midwest calling. We don't like that you're separating us. Maybe we could work that out. That's what we should do. We should do more live pranks to voicemails, Pete. Really good. All right, we'll take a break here. Stay with us. 312-981-7200. We're talking about the Midwest and whether or not we should let those fat cats. I like that word. Fat cats in Washington, or those fat cats in Hollywood, or those fat cats in oil, or those fat cats in Canada. You just call fat cats for anything, right? You just name an area of the world and just say, those fat cats, those Saudi Arabian fat cats. You're a little punch drunk. It's 9:20. The argument, and I think it's a strong one, is whether or not they're misusing the word Midwest when they talk about Midwest voters. And there's just so much, you know, obviously with the Iowa caucuses coming up next week. And about the voting history in 2016 and how many of the Midwestern states, Wisconsin, Ohio, Indiana, they went for Donald Trump. And so they keep saying, will the Midwest voters go for Donald Trump again? And yet there's an outlier. And one of the outliers is the state of Illinois and city of Chicago, which we're broadcasting out of. voted the other way. They voted blue, and it's the only blue state in the region, in the Midwest. So the question is you know, does that mean that Midwest is defined more along the lines with social and political values as opposed to region? Because you can look at any map, and obviously Chicago is going to be in that map for the Midwest, even if you used a, I don't know, a northern part of the Midwest or southern part of the Midwest. Chicago's always there. But have we gotten to a point where the Midwest is two different areas? Physically and mentally. Maybe that's what it comes down to. 847 says they can't redefine. They're saying the same thing. They can't continue to redefine. We got to stop them. I think so, too, because I don't like that. You hear Penny say that she doesn't like to go south. She goes, you know, south I-57, and she starts to get scared because everyone's hostile toward Chicago. That's ridiculous. And I would say the other way around, too, that people in Chicago shouldn't be hostile to people who live outside of it. We share way too much in common. We are all Chicago or all the Midwest. And if we don't think about that, if we don't think that way, then, I don't know, the consultants that are kind of taking a X-Acto knife to our area are winning. I don't like it. And we can have our differences. You don't have to politically be the same. Hmm. 773 says, I'm on my way home. I'm 47 minutes south of downtown. An SUV just passed me with a license plate 10 gauge. We definitely live in the Midwest. I pulled over to text you this. Yeah, responsible texter, 773. I just assume everybody's in their car. If they're texting, they're like, Alexa, or whatever you do in your car. You're like, and then you're just talking in the ether to your car, hoping that you get it correct. I live in Rockford, says 779, and it's called the suburb of Chicago, which it's not. I think of Rockford not being a suburb of Chicago. I think Rockford's its own town. For a long time, wasn't Rockford the number two city in the state of Illinois? It's fallen on a bit of hard times in terms of population and the city center. And I know Naperville and Aurora, I think Aurora's number two now. But Rockford used to be the number two, and I think everybody knows that. I knew... being from McHenry County, that Rockford was not a suburb of Chicago. Although, I don't know, it's hard because, you know, I was in McHenry County. Crystal Lake, McHenry, Woodstock, Wonder Lake, I don't think they think of themselves as suburbs of Chicago. I think Chicago is the anchor town, the anchor city. You know, you want to be a part of Chicago. Everyone's a part of Chicago sports and Chicago lore and all that kind of stuff. A lot of people transplants from the actual city proper that live out there. I don't know if they think of Woodstock as a Chicago suburb or Rockford. Let's go to Annette. Annette, what do you think? Chicago and the Midwest are the same thing?
Well, now inside the state of Chicago and the state of Illinois, mm-hmm. The thing is that even, you know, my parents had moved us out. We grew up in Melrose Park, and they moved us out to Amboy, south of Dixon. Mm. And since they found out we were from Chicago, they were very much not welcoming a lot of the people, and they said because Chicago takes all the state funds.
Yeah, that's such
so. And I've even mentioned I work in Belvedere now, and I live out towards Rockford. And if I mention I grew up in Chicago, and I have friends and family in Chicago. Oh, they take all the money, and they're hostile against.
I love that people are hostile about state government funding.
They don't like to think of themselves, you know, on the same plane a lot of times. And it's not really, I think, so much, I would say, the under 40 crowd. It's like the 40 and over crowd that grew up, you know, with hearing their parents say, Chicago's taking all the money.
Chicago's taking all the money. Right. Thanks, Annette.
Yeah. Awesome. Oh, okay. Bye-bye.
Bye. Yeah. I don't know how to feel about that argument. And I know that, again, I think we can have disagreements, and I think Chicago you can't argue with the size of the city, right? I mean, that's, at the end of the day, it's all about ratios, as Steve said. He's a ratio guy. But, you know, the funding is all based on ratios and based on what people need. I don't know. I find it hard to believe that people are hung up on state funding models. That argument is straight from whatever blog you read. I've never been in any conversation, and I do this for a living. I talk for a living. I need to read everything, but I've never been in any conversation on this area or whatever. It's like, yeah, state you make too much money from state funding. I think that stuff is all, again, created to divide. No doubt about it. Chicago gets its high percentage of state funding. There is no doubt about it. And I'll bet it is annoying and is downright frustrating when we have to go back down to Springfield and be like, we need more. It's ridiculous. You know what? We miscalculated. Can you give us more? I can understand that. But that's politics. And at the end of the day, I'm not sure that money that's being given to education in Chicago is being taken away from education in Belvedere or Dixon or Annette was from. So that's the part that that's hard to wrap around. But again, I don't know. That's a different conversation. 773 says, this is good here. In my opinion, Chicago is part of the Great Lakes, a sub-region within the Midwest, just as the Pacific Northwest is a sub-region of the West Coast. We share the Great Lakes with those other cities. You mentioned Milwaukee, Cleveland, and Buffalo. We even have our own dialect, the Northern City Vowels. So, from Gary. Oh, old buddy Gary listening to the show. Love it. I agree. So maybe this is not the Midwest. Maybe it's a subset. Maybe Chicago is just Chicago, like he's saying. Pacific Northwest is a subset of the West Coast, but they never call it the West Coast, especially when you get that far up north. Maybe Chicagoans don't want to be called Midwest. I didn't even turn it around on you. I want to hear from Chicagoans who say, "Listen, no, I don't want to be part of the Midwest. We got our own thing going on here. This is Chicago. You can name everything else around it Midwest, but this is a different. This is an urban city. This is the city on the hill. There's no hills. One in Beverly, there's a hill. That's about it. That's about it. There's a couple other fake hills around here. That's always my fun thing in Chicago. Oh, there's a hill. Oh, look at this. 312-981-7200. We'll take a break here, and we'll come back and continue. Stay with us. Some great texts coming in, and I want to read them, and I want to move on, too, because we've talked about this for almost 30, 40 minutes now. 708 says, I've always wondered, and I do love, this is a great text. I've always wondered why we are considered Midwest when geographically we are really the Mideast. We're 800 miles from the East Coast. We're 2,100 miles from the West Coast. Perhaps we've been labeled incorrectly the entire time. There you go. So whenever a pundit is on, a Beltway pundit is on the air, one of the Sunday talk shows, or is up in your Twitter feed, and they talk about Midwest voters, go, Mideast voters. See how they respond to that. Also, as 815 puts out, hey, we're all fibs. Yeah. I'll let you figure that one out, what fibs is. That's what people, the rest of the Midwest responds to Illinoisans. That's a good bit. All right, 312-981-7200. We got lots to talk about tonight. We could go right into the baseball stuff. This is a hot topic, sports. You guys love sports. I love sports. The Major League Baseball announced today that they're going to mic up the umpires. Up to this point, umpires, and that might be the only, I don't think they do it in basketball either, or hockey for that matter. So hey, football's the only one that does it because the stadiums are so big and there's so many penalties that need to be explained. Holding, I'm going to shame number 73. So the fans will get angrier at number 73. holding 10 yards again, number 73. They are miking up the baseball umpires, but not for balls and strikes, because that would be too awesome. Imagine if that was amplified through the hall of Wrigley Field every time. Strike! Put a little echo, a little reverb on it. Strike! No, only for when they now go to the replay and it takes 10 minutes and they're over there and the three or four umpires look like they're looking at something and they're super intense, but they're just waiting for the office somewhere to tell them what the answer is. They're not like in the end, like they're all wired now to every, there's other people make the decisions on that stuff, but they have to go over and make it seem like they're working hard. They get a headphone out. Yeah, I'm going to seriously just sit here and pretend like I'm doing something. And then in that headphone, you hear, yeah, it's a home run. They go, all right. And then they come back and they just give you a little round tripper sign. And everyone goes, yeah, I guess the home run. I don't know why, but they did it. They announced it. Why? And there were a couple moments in the playoffs, I think they did this. And there was question about they didn't really explain what they were doing. I forgot the specific play because none of the Chicago teams were in it, so I didn't watch. But now they're going to have the umpires going to come on and be like, nah, yes, we looked at the footage and home run. Right? Or we decided that the left field line, it grazed the foul pole. Number 24, home run. And so they're going to do that. That's going to be the new thing in baseball. So we're going to hear the voices of the umpires. And I don't think I'm going to be that far off. To be honest, I think every umpire sounds like that. Nah. Very Dicka. Just think Dicka. Nah. Or Dave Wanstead. Like a Wani. If Wani was an umpire, that's what I think they're all going to sound like. And I think that's good, right? It'd be fun and add a little spice. But the one that's making controversy tonight is that sources are telling sources upon sources. So many sources. Pss, pss, pss. You didn't hear from me. Pss, 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 pss. That it's inevitable, and it'll probably happen in 2021, so not this season, but the next, that the National League will convert to designated hitters, that a DH will come in and replace the pitcher batting. Whoa, what a novel concept. The AL, the American League, has been doing that since the 80s, but in the advent of interleague play, in the way that they both the leagues now play every team every which way, it's a lot of interleague play. It used to be just a week, and we would have a lot of fun being like, I've never seen them play the Twins. Wow, this is what it's like if the Orioles come to town. Now it's every other game. Every other series is an interleague. So the National League is at a disadvantage in the way that they play in AL parks, and they have to change it up. And obviously, it's also the AL's at a disadvantage when they go to NL parks and they have to bat a pitcher who hasn't batted all year. And so just for the fairness of the game, do away with it. DH for everybody. I don't find any joy or any usefulness for the pitcher to bat in 2020. I just don't. I think the day and age when baseball had an amazing strategy and you'd have your skipper over on the side and he'd be like, I'm going to pinch hit right now and I'm going to go to my left hand. That's over. It's over. It means nothing in this day and age because you have so much interleague play and a DH is used so often. I know people go crazy. The lines are going to light up. 312-981-7200. You can call and yell at me. But I am not a traditionalist in this form. I think baseball is better when you put a guy who hits 40 home runs as a designated hitter over a pitcher who stands up there and just lets and strikes out. And I also think it's a disadvantage because I don't want the National League pitcher that I love on the Cubs, a Yu Darvish, to have to be taken out of the game because there's a statistical advantage for having Tommy La Stella come off the bench. I don't like it. I'm totally for the designated hitter across the board. And it's not as much sports talk because we're not talking about who the designated hitters are. But I think like everything in life, tradition has a moment and tradition has... I think there should be some tradition to be considered. But in this case, I just think it's antiquated garbage. I think people on Twitter today arguing back and forth about the tradition of baseball and the fact that the pitcher should bat. That's hogwash. It's hogwash. Baseball is much more fun when guy get to plate. Guy smash ball. Guy run to first base. Team wins. As opposed to, oh, that's it. That's going to be it for the pitcher. They're going to go to the pinch hitter, and the pinch hitter never gets on. It's an antiquated thing. So I say, do away with the pitcher batting, and let's move on to better baseball in the 2020s. I like it. 630 says, I agree with you on the DH, but the purists, oh, they're going to have a field day. They're going to hate you. Purists. What do the purists think about stealing signs? What do the purists think about steroids? I don't know. At a certain point, you're like, what's pure about baseball? The purists not like walk-up music? That's not how it's supposed to be. They can't play Baby Shark. It needs to be organ music or nothing at all. Mary 847 says she loves hogwash. She's a more often. It's true. That's the name of this whole show tonight, Hogwash. Hogwash with Justin Kaufman. We get a Pete, maybe we can get like a nice cool sound effect. Hogwash. No interleague. Keep the league separate. Then you don't have this issue. You could do that. Maybe I also could listen to that argument because again, We're over the fanfare and the surprise of, ooh, we're playing the Mariners. Well, I didn't know what that was like. Now I've seen it. I'm like, oh, it's just like every other baseball game. That's totally what it is. Oh, my gosh. We're playing the Dodgers? The White Sox and the Dodgers? That's not right. We're so over that. It's been, how long has it been, Pete? It's been 10 years plus on Interleague, probably longer than that now. I feel like the shine has worn off the interleague play. Now, you could go back to just the two leagues playing separate, or you just adopt the same rules and just say there's two leagues like hockey or basketball or football, and everyone plays by the same rules. If you really think about it in that regard, if you really think about it, how weird that you have a league, the Major League Baseball, that has two divisions, essentially, or two across the board, that are played by different rules. It's the only professional sport that does it that way. Can you imagine the Hawks going to L.A. to play the Kings, and they're like, oh, no, the goals are up. They're up. We don't have goalies, and you have to hit the puck in the air. It's up. It's like basketball. That's how we do it. That's how we do it in the East, or the West, or whatever it is, right? Go to Detroit. Yeah, sorry. No, we don't play with a puck. We play with a Swiffer. It's a Swiffer thing. It just kind of zips around. Yeah. And no pants. We don't do pants in this league. Yeah, it's ridiculous. There's no other league that's like that. Even the XFL has different leagues, and they're playing by the same rules. A touchdown's a touchdown. So baseball has to come around. How they haven't up to this point is ridiculous to me. I don't know what, is there like a huge baseball lobby? Does the purists have a lobby? Some big consulting firm? And it's like, we are never going to let this happen. It's how, they just don't care about, do they not go, do they not have a rules committee? Like in football, every time there's a bad play in the playoffs, the next year they change the rules completely. Now we're going to do, pass interference replays, but only half-ass it, because that's what we do. So when it actually counts, it really, the rule didn't change. At least they play that. At least they do that. In baseball, maybe they don't have a rules committee. Maybe there's like every 10 years, we'll just all get together and crack a beer and eat some chicken in the clubhouse. Like the old Boston Red Sox pitchers like John Lester and Josh Beckett. Remember that when said that they would be in the clubhouse just when they weren't pitching, just drinking beer and eating chicken? That's awesome. 708, call me a moron. I don't know about that. 312-981-7200, a phone number. It's Justin Kaufman. I'm with you till 11 o'clock tonight here on 720 WGN. Nick coming up next at 11. We started the program talking about Kobe Bryant. The whole world talking about Kobe Bryant. I thought last night the coverage was really excellent on ESPN. I don't consider them a competitor. Are they a competitor? It's all sports. I really like Scott Van Pelt. Maybe he's bald like me. I kind of like that. I just think he's great. I think it's such a great mix where he can do the highlights and they go round the clock, but then he also has something to say at the end. And he was really thoughtful about Kobe Bryant, like more than I cared to be at the moment. And I just thought it was really good. I have to say that there's been some great stuff on social media. And tonight we talked about just the emotion around when a celebrity dies. We did it in the 7 o'clock hour. Just the idea that people are shedding tears for this man that they've never met. They watched on TV, and he's a celebrity, and he made unbelievable basketball moves and won championships doing it. And the emotion is pretty intense. I mean, obviously, with his family, his 13-year-old daughter, and as someone pointed out, tears for the living. There's the people who are mourning today of all the family members that were on that helicopter. But the question we asked was just, you know, when in your lifetime have you cried over a celebrity death? And a lot of people text in. They said, yeah, of course, Elvis Presley, John Lennon. John Lennon was a huge one. John Kennedy, of course, President Kennedy. Some Heath Ledgers. Walter Payton, that's mine. And I thought about it more with the Walter Payton stuff that I just felt that it's such a place in time. You know, the moments you fall in love with a celebrity or someone who's on the field is when they mean something to you at a certain age. And being in Chicago and watching Walter Payton play and watching him win, even when the Bears didn't, but just watching him win and having such a charming personality in doing so and recognizing that this is, regardless of what I knew about his off the court or off the field, anything, I didn't know and I still don't. It didn't matter. You just thought Walter Payton was a hero. That's why sports figures are always heroes, right? Michael Jordan the same way. I think that I would probably shed tears for any of the Chicago sports heroes of my youth. Whether that's legit or not, I don't know. I don't know. It's just my connection to the sports people. But we asked you, and there's so many texts, and I really appreciate everyone that texted in. 678 says, sweetness, no doubt. 630 says, I cried when Michael Jordan's father was killed. That's a good one. Because that was, again, that plays to crying for the living. Roger Ebert, 815. That's a good one. That was such a sad one. Robin Williams is 773. We got a lot of Robin Williams before. I was very sad and cried when Walter Payton died and when Paul Walker died from Fast and the Furious. I met both of those guys. They're really friendly people, which is Russ. Yeah, so anyway. Keep them coming in, but that was kind of where we landed on that convo. Another convo, I've switching gears entirely. One story that's been in the news today that I find to be to have insight and to be able to give you value. That's what you're looking for as WGN listeners, to find value. The story that has been in the paper about an ATM machine that was lifted, it was stolen from a near West Side gas station. It's my gas station. How about that? I didn't realize it until I actually looked at the address. So if anybody has any questions about the veracity or the safety of that gas station, I can answer it. I will tell you, that gas station, which is at Jackson on the near west side, is not, it's not one of your new ones. It's not one of your fancy ones. There's fancier ones around the corner. You can go to the one by 290 in the Ashland. There's no walk up. You can't walk up and be like, can I get a Sprite? Like, what are you getting in gas station? You know, if you live in the suburbs, that's your go-to kind of 7-Eleven, right? That's my favorite thing about suburban gas stations. It's like you can spend hours in there. It's so clean. You might even have a hot dog rotating, some nachos, pour that cheese right in. Just like, you know, they don't have that downtown. Downtown, it is a bulletproof booth that says the word cashier above it. But when they made the gas station, the owners forgot the I. So it just says cashier. And then they tried to paint the eye, but they made it really skinny. It was one of those things where you're just like you would do. Like, I could fix it. I can fix it. Don't start over. It's too much money to start over. I can fix it. Let me just go really skinny eye. So now it's cashier with a line in the middle. So it's kind of like cass-er. Cass-er. And yeah, that guy never comes out of that thing. Like, almost by, you could tell. He's like, I'm protecting myself. The rule book, the employee handbook says, I don't get out of this thing. If you got a problem, that's your problem. But this is the cockpit, and I ain't leaving it. So I can only imagine, because I know where that ATM was. It's in the actual, they have it's one of those ones with a car wash attached. The car wash is pretty low rent. I think it's like $5, and you just kind of go through it. Like, it's the most, it's almost like they started to build a car wash, and they're like, you know what, this is fine. We don't need a track. We don't need anything. Just, we have the frill things that wash the car. We don't need a dryer. Just get $5. It's fine. But the ATM is in that part. So I could totally see guys going in there and just being brazen to go, I'm taking this ATM machine. And the guy who's sitting in the booth's like, I ain't getting out. Go ahead. But yeah, that is my gas station. I was so excited. I felt like it was like a moment for me. I could add value. It's a strange little corner, because there's a rental car place that's next to it, and it's not that safe. So it's kind of funny, like the idea that you see these headlines and you think that it was, oh man, crime is just overrunning. Let me just say, it's not that surprising to me that someone would try to lift an ATM from there. That's the place that I'll roll up. I get so annoyed by this, and I think I've talked about this on the show. I roll up, your whole experience is 2 minutes there. You know, the first thing you do, this is the kind of place where the first thing you do is you grab the credit card reader and shake it to make sure it's not a fake one. Right? You know what I mean? That's the kind of gas station we're talking about. You're like, okay, I think it works. You hide your PIN as you kind of put it in on the machine. And then you stand there and you wait for a guy to walk up to you and say, hey, I don't want to bother you like this, but I was wondering if you had like a dollar. Or like $5. I gotta get to Indiana, and I gotta get gas, and I just lost my card. Just, you know, nice dressed guy, and you're like, oh yeah, man. Yeah, all I got is 50 cents. And this, all right, thanks, man. Thank you. Sorry, I didn't mean to bother you. And then the next week, you go, and you do the same thing. And the guy walks in and goes, hey, man. I'm like, hey, buddy. I don't want to be a jerk. I like that you're scam. I like your scam, but you already did it on me. Remember who you scammed. It's the number one rule in scamming. Remember who you scammed. You can't just go scamming the same guy twice. That ruins the whole scam. Truly, I was thrown aback. And the way I approached him, I wasn't angry. I wasn't hostile about it. I was like, hey, quick word of advice on the scam. Don't do it twice. Because now I know. See, because I wouldn't have known before. So I'm not going to tell anybody. So it was also too, because he went to the other car, but then he had like kind of a vibe that was like, if you say anything while I try to scam this guy, I'm like, hey, in my business, if he buys your, I bought your story last week. You want to try it again? Go for it. What? Who am I? I'm not the police. You can get 50 cents out of him too. Good for you. But yeah, it was a very weird moment because he accepted that. He accepted me going, All right, yeah. Fair. That's fair. That's fair. You're right. Bad scam. Bad scam artist. I got to work on my game. I'm going to work on it. All right, let's do this. I got to take a break. I went faster. I went all the way through to the talking about the ATM. Let's talk Grammys. I want to talk fashion. I read this piece today about how it was an underwhelming year for fashion at the Grammys. What? The problem is, I don't know what that means. Maybe you do. 312-981-7200. We'll be right back. Text coming in. This is 678 says they've been blowing up ATMs in Florida. So at least we're not there. And they're stealing them here. It's funny because I live in that community and they have the, like everyone now has a Facebook page that is like a community Facebook page. And all the talk was about how the state's attorney, Cook County State's attorney's got to go because the ATM got stolen from the gas station. And they're just talking about there's no, you know, the crime is up because nobody cares. They're not going to get caught because of the bail and the county prosecutors are not prosecuting. And they know, these petty criminals know this. I'm like, yeah, right. They read the Sun-Times. More importantly, am I the only one in the neighborhood who's lived in Chicago for more than 5 years? I mean, I hate to say it, but the Cook County State's Attorney's only been the Cook County State's Attorney for 3 years. You don't think they were stealing ATMs in, say, 2015 or 2010? And since the advent of ATMs, there have been ATM stealing. And I don't think that the criminals in Chicago are now brazen because they have boned up on jail policy. I think it has much more to do with, I don't know, all the time. It's ridiculous. It has not changed. I don't know what the stats are. I don't have the stats in front of me. But as someone who has seen the news enough times to say ATM machines being stolen is a category, it's probably a hat. It's, if you work in websites, you're like, oh yeah, we'll just put this in ATM steal. Stolen ATMs category. Yeah, it's not a thing. Yeah, I always bristle. I want to talk about that. Maybe we can talk about that later in the week. Just about, do you think that crime is up? Do you stats say, do you follow the stats? Do you go by gut feeling? What do you do? Because I could say I know firsthand from getting mugged. Get mugged in 2003. That was 2003. To act to say in 2020 that it's worse than 2003 when that was pretty brazen. I don't know. I just think it's always bad. You got to watch out. All right. Let's talk Grammys. First, before we do that, I just want to honor the people who text in. 815 says, cried when the Pope died. Pope John Paul II. Polish Chicagoan here. Didn't necessarily cry, but emotional when Robin Williams died. Robin Williams. Bob Collins, 815, of course. I miss Mr. Rogers and Jim Henson. Yeah. These are all great. Ron Santo, of course. Thanks for texting in, everybody. All right, let's talk Grammys, shall we? We'll wrap it up here. Last night, the Grammys were handed out. Big nights for Billie Eilish, Lizzo, and pantsuits. According to some, the fashion worn on the red carpet underwhelmed. I read this think piece in the, I think it was the Federalist, about how fashion represents culture. And when it goes risky, it symbolizes pushback. It symbolizes rebellion, a sort of counterpunch to the status quo. And that was not on display last night. So what should we take away from Ariana Grande's dress? That we're mindlessly accepting the powers that be's power stranglehold on all of our lives? Billy Porter's pantsuit is a representation of how we've lost our will to be free. And Billie Eilish's green streak in her hair? Well, that's just stupid. It's ridiculous. What do you think of the fashion? I'm not a fashion guy. I didn't watch much. I went to see Bruce McCullough from Kids in the Hall last night. Bruce McCullough's awesome. And I got a bone to pick with CBS because this morning I was so excited to watch the Grammys to get ready for, you know, chopping it up with all you. And they don't have it on demand. All they had were highlights that you go to YouTube and watch. I kept talking into my remote control and getting angrier at the remote control, as you do when it doesn't get your search right. You then get mad and passive aggressive with the machine. I said Grammys. Wasn't there. And I don't know if that's their thing. Like, you're not doing it. Not putting it up there. Maybe it has something to do with the performances. I don't know. But I was upset. That seems like the one thing you would want to do is put it on demand in the morning, because it should get you better ratings. I don't know. I don't know what the deal is. But I read this think piece and, you know, I asked my wife about it and she was like, yeah. And then looking at the piece, other pieces, it didn't seem like it was an overwhelming year for fashion. So what does that mean? Is it a bad? You got to tell me. I don't pay attention to the fashion. And I thought, and they talked about Bjork in this piece, and they talked about others who have hit J-Lo's dress she did that everybody knows. This was from the Grammys. The Grammys is where musicians, who are usually the countercultural rebels, they're the ones that can take risks. They're going to blow your mind. You won't see it as much at the Oscars. You'll see it more at the Grammys on the red carpet. And it just wasn't on display last night. So what do we think? 312-981-7200. Tell me. I don't know anything about fashion, except that I look good. Hey-o. Let's go to Holly. Hi, Holly.
What hey, Justin. How are you this evening?
Good. Thanks for calling in. So what did you think of the fashion at the Grammys?
So I think the fashion was kind of a side note to the whole evening. Ariana Grande's dress was great. Billy Porter's lampshade hat that was, it like moved. It looked like the Fragile lamp from Christmas Story, but you know, this year wasn't about the fashion. I mean, the fact that it fell on the same day that Kobe Bryant passed away.
Yeah, I get that.
The fashion was really set aside, and I really wanted to say that Alicia Keys just crushed it. She started the show on such a great note, honoring him, mentioning that the house that Kobe built, the fact that they were in the Staples Center was so iconic with all of the fans outside, really set the tone for the evening. So when you think about life, fashion is not the most important thing.
All right, there you go. Thanks, Holly. Yeah, I guess. But these guys didn't, you're not changing your outfit. If you're Ariana Grande and you get the news during the day that Kobe Bryant passed away suddenly and a helicopter crash, and I'm like, you know what, scrap the swan dress. Right? I don't want to do the swan dress. I'm just gonna go with this gray one instead. I mean, people didn't do that. They can't, right? They can't make an adjustment at that point. Like Shawn Mendes, you know, with his cool pink suit, it's like, you know what, I was gonna go lime green, but you know what, I want to be more respectful, I'm gonna go pink. 630 tells me, besides a couple of the outfits, the fashion was dead awful. See, I'm the right. All right, so I'm feeling it. I feel like I was right. As Holly says, she wasn't really paying attention to the. Maybe that's why everyone's underwhelmed, because they were somber because of like how we were watching it. Or more, it was difficult to get into the parade that was the fashion, and maybe they weren't super into it. 773 says, who uses on demand? Get a TiVo. What are you talking about? I don't know about that. I feel like I forgot. I forgot to record. I can record it. I can record it through my Comcast. I have a DVR. I don't have a TiVo. Who's got a TiVo? Is that thing still? I guess it is. But I'm at a certain point where I just, and I know this is not what we're talking about. We'll go back to the, I get mad because technology is there. They've proven it. I can't tell you how many times the People's Choice Awards jump up on my screen when I go to the on-demand screen as trying to get me to watch the People's Choice Award, which I had no intention of watching. The same with the Emmys, probably the same with the Oscars. Yay, check it out. Check it out. It's the first thing. Take it. Take it. So why didn't they do it the one time? I wanted to watch the garbage that is an award show. It's not available. It's probably something to do with the rights to the music and the performances, whatever. I was very annoyed by it. Or maybe an intern at Comcast fell asleep, or CBS or whatever, and forgot to post it. But I don't know, but I was annoyed by it. I had to go watch the wrap-up shows on YouTube, which are just the worst. People sitting in high chairs and offset Oh, what a great night. It was so great. Wasn't it great to see Billie Eilish? It was great. Nobody watches that stuff. I want to be able to take away that that dress was poor without you telling me. I need to know for myself. 312-981-7200. We'll take a break here. Come back. Stay with us. Before we get back to the Grammy talking, I got a lot of texts to get through. I got a great text about scams at the gas station. This is from 630. I got a happy scam story. Those are always good, right? Otherwise, it's just a scam story. I was pumping gas, and this guy comes up to me asking for $15. He blew a hydraulic hose on his truck and had to get home to his kid's graduation. Yeah, that's an embellishment. Yeah, come on, right? That's good. I thought, yeah, right, but I was in a good mood, and I gave it to him. You gave him $15. That's awesome. 4 years later, I'm on I-80 in a snowstorm. I spun into a ditch. A black semi saw it, stopped. It was the guy I gave the money to. He remembered me. He drove me back to Chicago on his way to Ohio. Wow! That is a happy scam story. That's awesome. It reminds me, you know, I gotta say, I forgot to mention this. It's my mom's birthday. We went to, told Delinsky, and talked about going to Trulux. But my mom, it's her 70th birthday, and happy birthday to her. And she did the nicest thing. She got cards for all of us for her birthday. And in it, she put money and a note. I wish I would have brought the note. Maybe I'll bring it in tomorrow. And the note essentially said, use this money to help somebody. Really nice, right? Whether it be a homeless person or a charity or whatever. It was $20, whatever. But it was like, wow, what a nice gesture on your birthday to do that. It's just really warm, and I didn't really get a chance to process that because I was a couple glasses of wine in. And I was just like, all right, thanks for the card. All right, what are we doing next? Are we doing this cake? What are we, this cake? Anyone want this leftover key lime pie? Can I eat it? Yeah, but that's nice, isn't it? Now I have to be very careful not to spend that $20 on myself because then you just feel shame, right? If you're like, oh, I need this $20, I promised Pete, Pete picked up that lunch for me, I'll just give him this. So that's a nice gesture. It's very nice. All right, back to the Grammys. As far as the fashion of the Grammys, this is 630. They weren't even really talking about it on the red carpet show before the Grammys itself, obviously, because of Kobe Bryant. But I wasn't impressed with the Grammy show at all. I think it took 40 minutes to get to the first award. I heard a little bit more of this complaint about the show. And trust me, you are preaching to the choir. I do not like award shows. That is the one thing about me that I always find myself watching it, which is annoying. And I find myself grousing about halfway through going, this is just an infomercial. The awards at the Grammys, at least, I'll give the Grammys credit. It's the one award show that doesn't care whether or not they give awards away. It's all about their performances. You could tell because they do all the crossovers. They have the BTS meets Nas X and Billy Ray Cyrus. That's what they do. And they've been doing that for a couple years now. Where it's even less about, because the fact of the matter is, you don't really care who wins Record of the Year. Let's face it. Let's all face it. We don't even know who half the people are. That's okay. Doesn't mean they're not great musicians. And they'd be great for the generations, and it might be a younger man's game to be like, oh, awesome, Tyler, the Creator. I love this record. This is my favorite rap album, and this is great, and I can't believe he's involved in it. Not necessarily my cup of tea, but at the same time, great. But they realized that at a certain point with the Grammys, and they said it's fashion and it's performances. That's why they don't go into the awards right away. They know if we're here for the music. Lizzo was one of the first ones up, right? And Alicia Keys, but Lizzo was, they knew what they were doing. We're going to put Lizzo up there, scantily clad, and she's going to get everybody to watch. I still want to know. 708 says, this was the last Grammy Awards I'll ever watch. I think I'm officially too old to comprehend what many of the performers were saying or singing. Additionally, some of the red carpet outfits. I did think Common looked great in his maroon suit. And Lizzo looked gorgeous in that white dress. The rest was no good. Yeah. I know. As you know, we had Common on this program. It was a couple weeks ago. And ever since, I've been dying to find those green, shiny parachute pants he was wearing. Because he was able to wear sweatpants to this interview. But they were shiny, and they were almost like parachute pants. And had drawstring, and they could balance that formal, casual vibe that I think we're all looking for. He's wearing them out, and you're like, you look good. He's wearing sweatpants. I wear a sweatpants. They're like, did you just wake up? I haven't been able to pull it off yet. And I know that those sweatpants, those beautiful, shiny parachute pants, are probably like $600. Some Soho, New York shop that he stepped into, and he's like, yeah, someone pay for it. Give this to me. You know, just like that maroon suit. Now I see the maroon suit at the Grammys. I'm like, yeah, man, another thing I got to get. I got the parachute pants, and I got to get the maroon suit in my quest to be Common's clone. If I could just stay one step behind him. I'm not trying to be fashion forward. I'm not trying to be on the frontier. He wears it. A couple months later, I wear it. It all works out. Keeping going. Let's see. 630 says, y'all too old to be in haters. I'm 33 and I still loved it. The 630. Okay. All right. Good. 847 says, what's a Lizzo? Oh, boy. I don't know. I'm at the age, yeah, I'm 45, and I know all the performers because I have a 12-year-old son that kind of keeps me close. And like, he cares. He doesn't care, but that just means that top 40 radio is on in the car more than I'd like. So I'm aware of all of the performers. And I like them. There's some stuff I'm open-minded to it. And I think that's the fun part about an award show like the Grammys, maybe more than the others, is that they are constantly trying to bring in new audience. So they'll give a shot to somebody like Tyler, the Creator, who won Best Rap Album, didn't he? Which is pretty impressive. It was pretty stacked lineup. And they let him go up there, and I'm sure that's what people are referring to when he did his performance, which was goofy with the blonde wig on, and it was all kind of, I don't know what, like they did a lot of camera tricks and stuff like that. But I'm okay. I think it's interesting. I kind of feel like, hey, I learned something. That's what, that's an artist. He's trying to be an artist, and that's interesting, and it's a young rapper. But at the same time, you know, the conversation really wasn't about whether or not we're too old or what's a Lizzo. It was really about the fashion, guys. Which, all right, we don't want to talk about the fashion, we won't. I'll just, when you see me showing up at the red carpet in a maroon suit in like 2.5 years, you'll know why now. Because I'm emulating my fashion hero, Common. So I'll do the show in shiny green parachute pants, and they'll save the formal maroon suit for a different time. How about that? Deal? 312 says, today's music industry looks and feels like a house of ill repute. It always has. What are you talking about? That was always a knock on the Grammys, is that they were giving Grammys to giving awards to what's the band that does Peg? Steely Dan. You know, when it was the year of Public Enemy or something. Now, I'm not saying Peg's not a good song. It's a great song. And Steely Dan's an okay band. But that was always a knock, that they were older in their approach and they ignored young music. And that's kind of a strange thing to do when you're the recording industry, when the lifeblood of your industry and your work is young people. So you would think that they would be more in touch with that. So I see where they're going. They're trying to get more in touch. There was an awesome story that didn't get told a lot about the Grammys, is that they do the Grammys beforehand. They have like the awards throughout the day or maybe the night before. They gave, I think it was Entertainer of the Lifetime Achievement kind of thing, to P. Diddy, to Puff Daddy, to Sean Combs, however you know him. He, of course, Bad Boy Entertainment, you know, of course, P. Diddy, huge impact on the world of rap and R&B, and he's getting a Lifetime Achievement. But they don't do it on the screen. They do it before. He had a 40-minute speech. And in his speech, I read this whole article today, his speech was essentially telling the recording industry to get their stuff together. He goes, you got a year. He was talking about all the stuff that was behind the scenes. They're having the big fight between the outgoing president and the former president. I think his president was accused of sexual harassment or sexual assault, maybe. But there's just a lot of infighting around the Grammys that and the music industry as a whole that is causing a lot of friction in the recording industry. But he said, I love it. I give him so much credit because he said, you've all been ignoring black music for far too long. You were late on the rap. You're late on giving Grammys to any of the black musicians of the 80s and 90s. You've done such a poor job of being representative, being the recording industry that's supposed to support and be inclusive. You instead have been exclusive. That's not what you're designed to do. Your job is to prop up the musicians, not to keep others out. That's what he said in this speech when getting his award. And then he said, I'm going to give you 365 days to get it right. And if you don't get it right, I don't think he finished that. I don't know, is he going to be like a Tupac Biggie kind of thing? Or there's a fight at the next Grammy Awards? Or is he talking about a boycott? Is he just mad? I don't know. It's interesting. 630 says Aerosmith and Run DMC had no idea what they were doing. Okay. I'm sure they didn't. And 727 says get off your lawn. Oh, okay. I guess that's me. All right, we'll take a break here. Nick DiGilio coming up at 11 o'clock. It's 720 WGN. All right, talking about the Grammys. We wrap up on the Grammys. Nobody cares about the fashion, I guess. It's all right. I didn't really care either, to be honest. I never care about the fashion. It's just not a thing. But I read that piece and I was fascinated that it's possible that the underwhelming show of fashion from our counterculture musician says something about our culture. That right now we're not fighting back. That there isn't this rebellious spirit among our leading musicians. That they're not talking about sticking it to the man like many have in the past. Maybe that's true or not, but I mean, you are honoring Aerosmith. It's not necessarily your 2020 rebellious band, but maybe that's what Tyler, the Creator, was in that show. It's interesting. It's an interesting thought. I never thought of fashion that way. But this article in The Federalist brought up great points about all of the big fashion pieces that we've been stunned by in the last 20 years. Even more than that. It almost always happens at the Grammys. Because they're worn by musicians who are trying to make a statement because they make statement with their art, and their music. And so you're more prone to risky fashion choices than, say, the Oscars, where it's really about them and their personal brand, or their agents, or whatever, the actors. You know, most of the other ones are actors. I kind of get that, right? I get that. Makes sense. You would think that you would see more from it, but not as much. 224 says, three things Alicia Keys should host all award shows. Gary Clark had a political song about Trump. That was awesome. I didn't see that. Yeah. And last, you could just put it on pause and Google the lyrics and then replay it if you're not sure what they're singing about. Come on. Nobody in the world is ever going to do that. I do say, though, I can understand. I'm getting to that point. Billie Eilish is a good example of that. She won so many Grammys yesterday, and she's a favorite in the house. And we mentioned on Friday, I was talking about karaoke, right? Which I'm still blown away by that whole concept. That our guest on Friday, if you're listening, he goes in character. He's an improviser in town, so he created a character to go to karaoke bars. He goes to one right downtown, and he pretends to be really into karaoke, and he sits there all night with a journal, jots down all the things that happened to him, but to the outside eye, he's just a guy with a journal writing things down with a glass of water. And every fourth song, he gets up there and sings a song. He's like got a different outfit than he would wear. Who does that? That's commitment. That's some Andy Kaufman level stuff there. I like that. Anyway, we were talking about karaoke, and you're absolutely right. My son loves all the top 40 stuff. And so when you do karaoke, you see the lyrics. Because it's on the big screen that we're all kind of feeling or following along with. And you get to a song like a Billie Eilish song, like the Bad Guy, which is the main song. And it gets uncomfortable really quick. It's just like, I don't even know. You're just like, huh. Like, I think I was doing karaoke. We were doing karaoke with someone's one of the birthday parties this year. And I think my dad was sitting there too. And I think my son was doing Bad Guy. And, or someone was doing, my dad just turned and goes, what are you singing about? And I was like, yeah, I know. It's not just you, man. It's all of us. Even me. I'm like, I know what they're singing about, and it's not right. And I don't mean it like not right. I'm just like, maybe it's not right in the context that my 12-year-old son is like, you're a tough guy, but the better pub guy. But that's art. I don't know. I feel like my parents probably tried to hang on as long as they could with the music I was listening to. And the same here. I'm trying to hang on, trying to stay connected with the Biebs as long as I can. Chance the Rapper, Billie Eilish. So I get it. And yeah, that's way more Grammy talk than I ever wanted to talk about. I don't really care about the Grammys. As somebody said in the text, it's glorified trade show. They are doing a show to get you to buy more music. They're celebrating themselves. And we all go, that's so awesome. And then they perform and they're like, I'm going to go buy this record. And that's what they're doing. Same with the Oscars, same with the Emmys. I just, at the end of the day, I'm like, I hate the, hate's not, that's a strong word. I dislike the fervor around the Oscars or the Grammys or the Emmys when people go crazy and have parties and stuff like that and they celebrate, because I'm like, the whole design of the Oscars is for them to pat themselves on the back so we go watch more movies. They'll have the speeches in the middle. Movies, what a wonderful thing. They have been with us through our childhood and they have been a companion for our entire lives. Go see one. And it's just sort of like, all right, you make enough money. I'm not going to watch you get all dressed up and celebrate yourselves and pat yourself on the back. All right. Rant over. Here's a great wrap up. This is a positive story. We'll wrap and go to Nick after this. It's a weather story. I saw this today. Thanks to the great Chris Duffy, who does all of our voiceover work here. He wrote that today the sunset in Chicago was at 4:59 p.m. And that means that this is the last sunset in the 4 p.m. hour until next fall. So from here on out, it gets into the fives. So it'll still be in the early fives through February. But we're on our way out. Isn't that great? I saw that and I automatically got a smile on my face. I was like, this is a tough day for the news with all the sadness around Kobe Bryant. My gas station's ATM getting ripped off. And the purity of baseball being ruined. The idea that there's going to be a DH in the National League. that the Washington Fat Cats and the Hollywood Fat Cats are not calling me a Midwesterner, trying to separate me from my brethren. All those stories. The best one is today that the sun set at 4:59 p.m. You gotta like that, right? So I'm not sure. I guess it'd be when they do the time switch in October. So it'd be November, probably, when you get to the darkest moment. Maybe December, the longest day. But that's when you're back. But right now, we've got a good 9 to 10 months before we will have a sunset in the 4 o'clock hour. Who loves you? Your buddy on the radio, Justin, giving you a great sign-off to the day, right? All night, you're like, stay. There's nothing good coming out of this day. The fashion at the Grammys was underwhelming. They're going to put health code violations on Yelp. All Kaufman's talking about is negative stuff. And right at the end, I sneak in and give you the positive. That's why we're friends, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, the 630 points out, the Super Bowl, this is great. What is sports and the Super Bowl all about? It's the Grammys of football. Yeah, it's true, absolutely. We'll talk about the Super Bowl this week. I am not a huge fan of the Super Bowl either. I feel like this is too much. Play the game. The fanfare leading up to that, especially, I don't know, it stings most of the time. Unless you're in Boston, you live in Boston, you're like, oh, Super Bowl's so fun because it's always your team. So this year, you're like, eh, it's not that big of a deal. I don't know. It's the last time we were in the Super Bowl. Now, 13 years ago, and we lost. Haven't won a Super Bowl since 1985, January 20th, 1986. You know, the Super Bowl becomes more of a pained memory, or I guess it'd be a memory, of what hasn't happened for 30-plus years than a celebration of Doritos. Or who's the halftime is J-Lo? Oh, I wonder if she'll bring out A-Rod and he'll do like a rap or something. That would be cool. Another guy, A-Rod. Nick DiGilio coming up next. This week's a big one for us, guys. We'll talk Super Bowl, but coming up this week, we got the Super Bowl of our Chicago Movie Challenge, our ultimate Chicago Movie Cage Match. We have the final two movies. Can you believe it? All of that movie talk, all of that bracket down to the final two movies to crown the best Chicago movie of all time. We'll do it Thursday. The two films, Ferris Bueller's Day Off versus The Blues Brothers. You have spoken. You got these two movies to the finals. And now you have to make a tough, tough decision. I don't know the answer to this one. And to be honest, I have both of these films have steamrolled their way to the end. So on Thursday, we'll crown a champion. Can you believe it? A champion right before February 1st. I told you we'd get this thing done in January. And it's going to be the Blues Brothers versus Ferris Bueller. Wow. That's amazing, right? I'm super excited about it. I don't know who the winner is. I seem to have an idea every week about who I think is going to, just based on how they did before, but boy, oh boy. I don't know. It's going to be good. 630, we'll leave it with this. 630 says, you're too young to be a cranky old man. Why am I cranky? I just gave you that great news about the sunset. Do cranky old men give you that news about the sunset? No. They just end. They go, I'm going to bed. I'm taking my pills and I'm going to bed. No, I chose to end on an up note, a high note, that there will be no more sunsets in the 4 o'clock hour. I think that's awesome. All right. So all that coming up this week with me, Justin Kaufman. Nick DiGilio up next. Got a great show lined up for you. We'll be back tomorrow. We're actually on all week this week. That's always exciting because we always get preempted by hockey, but this is the week off for our hockey. I think we start a little bit late on Wednesday because of Northwestern basketball, but the rest of the week we're here. So we got a full week. So come on back tomorrow night. Listen to Nick and just keep it on all day. Listen, Nick, and all the way through the day part, and we'll be back here. Talk about the Grammys again. No, that's it.